Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, of all the days to have my voice restricted, this is not the one I wanted. It's kind of weird. Whenever I get a cold, this is the first cold I've had in 2 years since I think I had COVID before we knew what COVID was. That'll be January of 2020. And so I really want to do what I think is going to be an extremely important show today, but I'm going to be speaking very quietly, so I'm going to check in with Gene, make sure that you can actually hear me. I'm kind of snuggling up to the microphone here so I don't have to shout. Normally I'm about, 4 to 6 inches back and just kind of, because I have a pretty much a booming voice. Today's not that day, though. I think I'm going to be okay. I've got plenty of water, but if my voice suddenly cracks or I have to race to the honey pot for a big spoonful of honey or, orange juice, something like that, I say, hey, Gene, it's your show. I'll be right back. It's going to be one of those days.
Good morning. You sound good.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Maybe you don't feel so good, but you sound good.
Okay, well, that's good. Now, it's weird. It's like, of course, the first thing everybody thinks of is COVID, right? Do I have COVID? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure I had it. I never did get tested, though, so maybe I'll look into that someday. But no fever.
But I've known a lot of people did COVID twice.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it can happen. Well, see, I don't even know if I had it the first time. I'm pretty sure I did because it seems to be all the symptoms. I was coughing like crazy. So this doesn't have a cough with it. And I couldn't sleep, hardly at all. It was just miserable. I didn't have a fever, really. It was a really low grade, but I was congested. And it was the cough that was so strange. It just didn't feel like anything else. That's why I think that's what it was. This just feels like regular sore throat. and I've gotten those. And it usually happens after I overwork, which is what I've been doing the last, week. It's been extraordinarily busy with extra meetings and, people getting involved with things. And it's been, it's like the more successful we get, I think the more I'm going to have to do. So I'm going to have to start really limiting. And I do a lot of limiting and delegating anyway. I mean, that's because it's just no one person can do all the things that we do. Anyway, so I had to work all day yesterday at the day job. And so Saturday, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I want to write the bill. Let me make a sort of a general announcement first. We're going to be at the rally. There's another rally. There's another medical freedom rally. And it's going to be in Pensacola. It's Pensacola, Florida, home of the Blue Angels. And it's going to be at the Blue Wahoo. And I can't figure out whether it's Wahoo or Wahoo. Because somebody's got to straighten me out who lives here, right? I've only been here about 5 years now. I still haven't figured it out. Anyway, so this beautiful stadium. It's for the Blue Wahoos baseball team. So they're not huge. They're not, major league, but it's a really cool local stadium. And it's just beautiful in there. Anyway, so I'll be out there on the where somewhere about where home plate is, speaking and talking about Action Radio. And of course, I hope my voice is much better by then. I'll still go on regardless, but it always helps to sound good. Anyway, so what we're going to do this time that was different than the last time is I'm going to be presenting Action Radio and presenting this bill that we're going to start writing today. Well, actually, I've already started writing it, so I've got some good progress. But the whole idea – see, here's the problem. The governor, who was initially terrible, Governor DeSantis, I call him Dictator DeSantis. When COVID first came out and Dr. Fascist was making all his proclamations and all the things to set up the country for lockdowns, masks, and everything else that happened so he could sell vaccines because he's nothing but a psychopathic, genocidal drug pusher. And I mean that sincerely. And Dr. Fascist, if you want to come after me, that's Penglis, P-E-N-G-L-I-S. Go ahead, go for it. I'm right. And the truth, you can't sue me for libel or slander if it's true. And so it is true. I mean, this guy, as far as I'm concerned, killed more people than the Civil War. When you think about it, by withholding medical treatments, by lying, by banning cures and banning information and basically issuing guidelines so people took as mandates in the hospital and people were thrown in ventilators and they died by the hundreds of thousands. And none of that was necessary. Would COVID have taken the lives of a certain percentage? Sure. I mean, a certain percentage of people were older, had comorbidities, in other words, other things that would kill you. And people died, but people die from flu every year. I mean, people die of something, or usually a lot of somethings. That's the situation. That's the lot we're given in here, So anyway, so the question is, do you want to stop the preventable loss of life, which is, you're not going to prevent loss of life. But if you can stop the preventable loss of life, that's a major accomplishment. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's what Dr. Fascist stopped by what he did. So the governor, again, was terrible. He closed the beaches. He ordered people to stay at home, at which point, as I said, I, you know, rolled down my windows, drove in my car, and sang country music loudly out the window. Screw you, governor. I'm not going to comply. So I was one of the original resistors back when everyone said, close the beaches, wear a mask. I'm like, screw that. That's nonsense. None of that works. Anyway, so Governor DeSantis improved, and improved, you know, by leaps and bounds. Now he's one of the leading governors in the country. For no mask mandates, no vaccine mandates. He's actually for freedom, and it's proven true. If you look at any of the stats, Florida stats as far as COVID go are fantastic. I mean, it's so low right now in Florida. In other words, you know, what killed COVID? Freedom. You know, if I can put it as simply as that, freedom killed COVID, okay? And so now the question is, what's going on in the state legislature? Because it's one thing for the governor to issue executive orders, but those are limited. As Governor DeSantis knows, as you know, thief in chief, you know, Biden, the coup leader, will never care about. But presidential and governor's executive orders are limited by statute. In other words, they can't make policy. They can't just make up stuff and do what they want, which is what all the, you know, the Democrat and even some Republican governors did throughout the lockdowns. They can't do that. All that was unconstitutional. You can't just make up stuff. It has to come from legislation. So all executive orders are based on the lawful authority granted by legislation by the legislature. That's how it works. Okay, that's the check and balance. And so Governor DeSantis has issued some pretty good executive orders, but he knows those are limited. And so what he asked the legislature of Florida to do was to convene a special session, I think it starts November 15th, to pass basically a bill that said there's no vaccine mandates in the state. Well, our state legislature, which used to be really good, I mean, the state legislature in Florida of the 80s, you know, before I got here, you know, passed the concealed carry laws, passed all kinds of things, lower taxes, you know, created the Florida boom. Well, that legislature has since been co-opted by, you know, Bloomberg. You know, if you look at the gun laws coming out of the state, they're basically, you know, radical leftist Bloomberg-funded or blocked bills. That's how we got the School Safety Act, which did a bunch of things not related to school safety. And so now we're facing the same thing. So Governor DeSantis proposes an emergency session, and he has the authority, I just found out, to grant it. I mean, it's in his proclamation. We'll get to that in a bit. And so he wants this session to basically codify, to put into law the executive orders he's issued so that we'll have, you know, no mask mandates, no vaccine mandates, and parents will have rights. He's got a bunch of things to clarify. So the legislature, and we found this out from Representative Anthony Sabatini, who I've invited on the show today to help with this whole process that we're going to go through. I've invited him on the show. I've invited, you know, some of my friends who, you know, help with all we do here, like David Jones, you know, Santa Rosa Volunteers, Cindy Cagle of Citizens for Medical Freedom, a bunch of different folks in the area. I've invited State Representative Michelle Saltzman to join us here. And she's been on the show before. She was on for an hour before she ran. And so anybody who I thought might be able to help or be interested in what we're doing, I've invited. And we're going to send this show to a lot of media people. I'll be sending it to Matt Gaetz, you know, because even though it's state legislation, a lot of it applies to what he might be doing at the federal level. And, of course, Anthony Sabatini is also running for Congress. And that's going to make a difference. I haven't been in touch with Luis Miguel yet, but when we do, we'll get him too. Okay, so the story continues that Representative Sabatini tweeted out last week that the state legislature has no interest in doing this, as he says, anything that the government proposes is basically dead on arrival. Well, enter Action Radio. Sorry, I just find this funny, right? So my point in this is if the legislature isn't going to do their job, we will. Okay, we'll write the bill. We'll send it to the governor. We'll send it to the legislature. We'll send it to media and say, you know, here's the answer to your problem. And we'll draw on, you know, the doctors of medical freedom. And, you know, I'm probably going to send this to Dr. Vic Leon, who coordinated the first rally, and she's coordinating the second one. I'll send it to the participants. I'll send it to friends of mine, you know, Dr. Judy Mikovits and Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, who I talk to fairly regularly. They've both been on the show, and say, hey, this is what I want to do in Florida. See, although I'm an ideas person, you know, ideas flood out of my head. You know, I'm sort of like powered by God and ADHD. That's probably the best way to describe it. I never like to do anything in a vacuum, and I don't like to do things without consensus. And so everything I do is open. If I propose a bill, it's not hidden. It's not secretly given. I don't sneak it to legislators. I publish it on writeyourlaws.com. And so the process of citizen legislation as it's developing as I'm learning how to do this, because there's nobody can teach me. I'm creating this whole thing, right? And so what really helps though is to have the input of other people. And so I do, you know, that is why this is such a consensus thing. And so, Gene, if you have a question or comment, you know, feel free to jump in anytime. If anybody wants to call me with a question or comment, you know, save my voice, please call me, 215-383-3832. And so if I said that fast, that note's on your broadcast page. And if you're listening to the podcast, it's too late. We're not on the air anymore. I encourage people to listen live if you possibly can, 6 to 9 Central Time, 7 to 10 Eastern. That'd be 5 to 8 Mountain Time and 4 to 7 Pacific Time. But if you can possibly listen live, please do. And we have listeners all over the world, New Zealand, Australia, Thailand. Not in China anymore. China's blocked us. You know, Vietnam, Russia. Russia's big. All over Europe. South America, not as many in Africa. I hope to build more listenership in Africa. But people are listening to what we're doing. They're listening to this brand new concept. Russia's huge right now. I just see Putin, like I said, when he gets his first bill from citizens of Russia saying, Vladimir, we have on this bill. I don't, that's more German. I'm sorry. I'm not on my game today. I'm just not. But Russian, let's go. So we give Vladimir a bill. There we go. That sounds more Russian. So this is what citizens want. I don't care what citizens want. I'm Putin, you know. So we'll see what happens. But if we can teach Russians, you know, how to make citizen legislation, and they start sending it up the political chain, I think it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be really interesting to see how that goes. Anyway, so that's what we're working on here. Excuse me. And do frequent water breaks. Just don't mind me. As I try, and it's going to be a long 3 hours.
Hey,
so
I just wanted to say, I read a couple weeks ago that DeSantis calling a special session, kind of a joke, waste of time now that it's so far away from when he called it, that they're getting together, just because it gives everybody a lot of time to come up with different things.
I don't know if that's true
or not, but I just thought that was interesting. It shouldn't matter when it was called. And when they come in, but they said, I don't even know what I was reading, but they said, yeah, it's just like he's doing lip service or something, because he should have made him come in right away, but I don't know how he could. I don't know what difference it makes.
I'll explain as we go through why that would be not a good thing to do. And the reason is, well, I'll tell you right now, is because his proclamation basically outlines an entire bill for the legislature. He's very clever. And he's done some really good things. Let me get to Pianki, though, first of all. And we get Pianki. Pianki is one of our premier callers and bill writers, you know, a true citizen legislator himself. So, Pianki, welcome to the show, sir. And like I say, help me out. My voice is of limited capacity today.
Well, good morning to you and Gene.
Morning.
Good morning.
You know, what a problem develops that is that when people has the process turned around backwards, the federal government gets its powers from the state.
Right.
Federal government has no business telling states that you have to take in aliens. That's the state's responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government controls the borders, but the borders stop at the state borders.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be looked at like that. And people that we're sending to the legislature have been conditioned to think that their boss is the federal government, whereas it's the other way around. You got certain ethnic groups in this country that believe that the federal government is the all-powerful because they are a minority in the state. I mean, does it make any sense?
Well, no, I'll tell you what it is. It's the difference between a federal and a national system, and most people don't understand the difference. In a national system, it's top-down, like a monarchy. Okay, Britain, for example. The people are not citizens, they're subjects. Okay, they are subject to the whims of the monarch or the sovereign. There's only one sovereign citizen in England, and that's Queen. Everybody else is a subject. Okay, so that's a national system. That's a monarchy. A parliamentary system, you know, is a national system. Parliament rules the states or provinces. The states or provinces rule the counties. The counties rule the cities, and it kind of works its way down from there. We don't have that here. We have a federal system. And the big difference that people need to understand is that the federal government has certain things they can do as authorized by the states in the Constitution. And the 10th Amendment says that whatever is not specifically authorized, they cannot do. So there's no supremacy over things that where they have no jurisdiction, okay? And this isn't, you know, people get jurisdictions confused. But, for example, health is not mentioned in the Constitution. Therefore, the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, none of that is legal, okay? They can't make guidelines. They can't make restrictions. Now, they can. The only thing that that the federal government could do is at the border. And the CDC actually does this. This is their one legitimate authority, as far as I know, is to say at the border, if you're coming in with a communicable disease and you got symptoms, you know, you can't come in. and that's all they can do. That's it. So their jurisdiction begins and ends at the border. Everything else is just marketing for their products. In fact, it's interesting. One of the stories.
Well, you know, the same thing.
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
The same thing also exists in the states. It's the people of the villages, the towns, mm-hmm. and the cities that give the state government its power. Because
right.
those that occupy state government, that's where they derive from. It's from mm-hmm. the villages, towns, and cities.
Okay, so here's a question for you.
People have things baffled.
Yeah. So who gives the people their power? Because the people feel disempowered. This is a loaded question.
The people were born with all the power.
Yeah.
The creator gave them all the power, which we call right, in the universe, until yep. you give them up when you let officials make laws to take them away from you.
Mm-hmm. So what I want to do with Action Radio is harness that power, is have a huge education process to let people know, A, they have that power, and B, that we can write laws that we consent to be governed by. Okay, that's the whole point of what we're doing here. And so when people wonder, well, you know, I get this question all the time. Well, don't you need a lawyer to approve your bills, you know, before you send them into, you know, the legislature? Well, I said, first of all, we're not forcing the legislature to do anything. We send them an email. We send them a link to the bill. We say, please, you know, submit this for consideration and send it to committee for study. And this is basically what our bills do. And we have bills in Congress right now. We got a Veteran Administration whistleblower bill that actually protects Veteran Administration whistleblowers. It's been in committee for, I think, 3 years now. So just because we get it there doesn't mean it's going to go anywhere. Okay, so we're not forcing anybody. We're not demanding. We're not, you know, this isn't an insurrection, folks. We're not taking our government. Okay, what we're doing is using it. Okay, but we're using it from the people. We're not doing anything that anybody else isn't doing. The difference between our legislation and everybody else's, like say Big Pharma, you know, for example, Big Pharma writes bills that benefit Big Pharma. We the people write bills that benefit we the people. So you look at any one of our bills, it doesn't get past me unless it benefits everybody. Okay, or unless it goes after people that are getting special privileges and we take those away to benefit the people who are suffering because some people have special privileges. And that would be our sort of war on illegal aliens right now. So that's the whole point of this. So you know, as far as, you know, I'll probably say this in the rally November 9th, that we don't need lawyers' approval to submit. And lawyers are going to look at this. I guarantee you every lawyer in Big Pharma is going to look at our bill on putting full product liability on them. Because they're going to go crazy.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, another thing, too, judges don't have to be lawyers to be a judge.
That's true.
You can have a room full of people. You can have an issue, and you can pick people out of that room in order to judge the argument that is before them. They don't have to be lawyers.
Yeah, well, I told you I want to be the
Supreme Court judge doesn't have to be a lawyer.
Well, you know, I want to be the first Supreme Court judge non-lawyer in 100 years. You know, that's one of my goals here. I want to be nominated for the Supreme Court. Can you imagine my committee hearing? I think I stumped Bianchi on that one. You still there? Oh, maybe.
Well, I'm thinking about the next one. but honest.
Sorry.
We have it backwards, Greg. Society mm-hmm. has it backwards just because of the condition. And the conditioning starts early, like mm-hmm. we see what's going on in the schools. That child in their school should be taught that they have all the power in the mm-hmm. universe. Not that you get your power from government. You was born with that power.
Yeah, but the thing is, how do people use it? And the way you use it is the way we're using it here. We write legislation. We get together. We don't get together the whole country because you can't, but we get together people of like mind who believe in freedom, and we propose legislation, okay? But we're every bit as entitled to propose legislation as Big Pharma is, and probably more entitled because we're actually doing things for the general welfare, which is in the preamble. I want to get back on track a little bit because time takes
you write legislation to create immunity from the overreaching power of government. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I believe we're doing the right thing. That's why I'm doing it. All right. So let me get this Breitbart article. This is kind of where it all started. When I first heard about Anthony Sabatini, actually told me that there were problems with the legislative session before I realized the governor had proposed it. So this is in Breitbart. This is Florida lawmaker, GOP-controlled Florida legislature, unlikely to ban vaccine mandates. Okay. And we've got a quote here from Speaker Designate Paul Renner. I don't know who this rhino GOP gelding is, but he says Renner conveyed to Florida Politics, that's one of our local media here, Florida Politics, that Governor Ron DeSantis' special session in November, that's the one coming up on the 15th, will not meet many demands of the voters because, quote, sorry, neither mandates nor employee restrictions will receive strong support. So they're already backing out, right? He says, probably nobody's happy at the end, Renner says. Now, here's where this guy is totally screwed up. His quote is, he says, the people on the side of vaccine or terminate are unhappy. Okay. Well, first of all, that's not their choice. You know, people have rights. They don't give up their rights when they go to work. And so the idea of characterizing people as vaccinate or terminate, there's a lot of problems with that. But here's the bigger problem. He says, and the people that are on the other side of, I can tell my employer what the terms of my employment are, and if I get sick, they have to pay for it. Okay. People aren't getting out of they're not, you know, not getting a forced vaccine because they want their employer to pay for it if they get injured or sick. They're trying to avoid getting injured, you know, sick or die. You know, this is, they're trying to avoid this. They're trying to exercise their freedom of choice. Yeah, and this guy's characterizing it as, well, they just want money. They just want money if they get injured from the vaccine and they want their employer to pay for it. That's completely mischaracterization. This is about freedom. This is about the right to choose your own body. This is about the Nuremberg Code of informed consent, you know, which came out of Dr. Mengele's bizarre and grotesque experiments in Nazi Germany. You know, this is what this is about. This is a bizarre and grotesque experiment. You want to see how bad it gets? Look at the recent stories of those horrible tortures of the beagles, of these dogs in Tunisia that Dr. Fascist has been doing for decades for no reason. And as we all know, serial killers and mass murderers start, you know, torturing and killing animals. So this seems to be a pattern with this genocidal psychopathic drug pusher that everybody seems to be listening to for, like, some kind of god. You know, I mean, he reminds me so much of the Nazis that ran Germany. It's sickening. Anyway, what do they call him? Speaker designate? Anyway, I'll get back. Renner, yeah. But the idea that this is all about money, he doesn't understand. You know, he's talking about the Biden administration, a term I never use. He says, they promised us unity. They've given us uniformity, and there's no sense of balance. Well, no, because they're Marxist dictators, you idiot. Anyway, let's get to the main point here. I'm going to scroll down, scroll past the geldings, and get to Anthony Sabatini. And this is where it says, state representative and congressional candidate Anthony Sabatini reacted to the legislature's failure to halt the mandate, calling the leaders of the legislature rhinos, you know, which, of course, they are, right? I would have said a lot stronger. He says, the tweet from Sabatini. He says, Florida's legislative rhino leaders just gave a massive middle finger to Governor DeSantis. They just announced that his plan to ban vaccine mandates is now dead on arrival. He says, call every legislator and demand a full ban on employee mandates. Well, if they've already said it's dead on arrival, calling them to try and change that, that's not going to work. We know that's not going to work because they don't care. In fact, they love it when people complain and yell and send in emails because they ignore them. Now, what I'm saying is if we have an alternative bill and people get behind it, we will shame the hell out of them because we'll say, well, look, if you won't write a bill, we will. And here it is. And that gives us a rallying point. That gives something for the media to write about. And the Florida legislature, you know, all of a sudden legislature, you know, why is this radio show, you know, writing legislation for the state of Florida that's better than the state of Florida is writing for themselves? That's how I think we have an angle and an edge. Pianki, what do you think? And we'll get Gene in the conversation too. Pianki, did you mute yourself?
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see if it works. Like I said, this is a grand and glorious experiment. We don't know where this is going to go. All right. So Gene, do you have a comment? I just want to get you on this too before I move on.
Continue on. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Any action from the live chat? Has Bubba Jack criticized me?
No, there's no live chat.
What did you guys do? Buy some new equipment?
No, it's probably just a better technology day.
yeah, it's working.
Wait a minute. Maybe it's the aftermath of Halloween, huh?
Yeah.
Must be. I was going to do my Dracula voice. Maybe I could do the Dracula. Proclamation, State of Florida, Executive Office of the Governor. Anyway, yeah, I'm feeling weird today. All right. Before I get started on this, hang on. I'm going to be drinking a lot of water today. This is going to be a struggle. All right. So the next step in this process of writing this legislation is to then go what the governor wrote. Because a lot of what I'm doing is based on what's happening. I'm really in favor of what Governor DeSantis is doing. In fact, I hope to get him this show today so he understands what we're doing. So the next thing that happened was this proclamation. And it says, to the honorable members of the Florida Senate and House of Representatives, whereas, and I'll say, you'll notice that none of our bills have the word whereas in it because it disgusts me. This is a whereas. These are like 50 whereases. So basically it calls for calling forth. It shows in Article 3, Section 3 of the Florida Constitution where the governor can call a special session. And he says, whereas the Biden, I'll call it a coup, has undertaken or is threatening to undertake extraordinary efforts to coerce, I would say extort, injections of the COVID-19 vaccine into Americans who otherwise would be unwilling to receive the vaccines for reasons of health, pregnancy, religious belief, and prior infection. And I would also say, because they don't want it, he's got all the whereases. And so it tells basically the story. So the whereases are real justification of why the state legislature must pass a ban on vaccine and other mandates. And he mentions a couple of things, whereas, there's like about 20 of them. Then he calls for legislative session. Excuse me. Oh, boy, it's going to be a long day. He says, now, therefore, I, Ron DeSantis, governor of the state of Florida, proclaim the following two things here. He says, section one, the legislature of the state of Florida is convened in special session commencing 12 noon, Monday, November 15th. Now, it's ironic, but actually it's good timing that our rally is on the 9th. So I'm going to present the bill that we write with a much stronger voice at that rally. But it's getting complicated, and I'll explain that as we go, too. So the special – all right, now here's where it gets really interesting. This is where the governor or either the governor and or staff are really intelligent. He says the legislature of the state of Florida is convened in a special session for the sole and exclusive purpose of considering legislation to, one, protect workers against COVID-19 vaccine mandates and address employer policies that force COVID-19 vaccination, and two, this is the part that caught my attention, clarified that Florida law vests student masking decisions in the hands of parents and strengthen enforcement of the protection. And here we go, the Parents' Bill of Rights, Chapter 1014. Hang on a second. I'll be right back. Yeah, Jean, feel free to talk whenever I take a break like that, just because.
Yeah, all of a sudden you were gone. I was like, whoa, okay.
No, I'm struggling. No, I'm taking a lot of water breaks, a lot of coughing breaks. But I want to make sure I get through this. Now, think about that. Okay, now why would you break up the Parents' Bill of Rights? Okay, Chapter 1014. So, of course, I immediately went to the Parents' Bill of Rights and said, huh, well, this is interesting. And then he does something else. He says, and then it says, and other related statutes as necessary to ensure Florida's school districts adhere to the requirements of state law. So he's really going after mask mandates as well as vaccine mandates in this bill. Because apparently there's a lot of school districts. And he did one of the whereas says that school districts, despite the executive orders, are still mandating masks. And they're quarantining healthy students. And they can't do that. They're not obeying the executive order. And the reason they're not doing it is because they get help from the Biden coup to do it.
Yeah, they get major monies. Major. Which is sad that they do it just because of money.
That. How's that work?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much, but yeah, I've read this, months ago that that's the reason why a lot of school districts are implementing the mask mandate is because the federal government gives them monies to do so. I mean, not to do so, but money if they do so. Yeah. So they're not out for the child's best interest. They're just continuing to push their narrative.
Yeah. And the teachers, they're out for, go ahead.
And the sad thing is, where was it? God, just last week I read, was it 77% of the people in, was it Illinois, I think it's in Illinois that's died of COVID in the last week or so, were all vaccinated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, Israel is having huge problems with all those people. Well, here's the problem with the things. It's not a vaccine, as we all know. It's a messenger RNA instruction gene shot to teach your body how to make COVID in the hopes that it will use that to create antibodies. Well, your natural immunity does that anyway. So the first flaw is it's not a vaccine. It's a gene. It's a gene infusion. It's a gene, you know, instructional infusion. The second thing is it's for the alpha variant. Okay, the alpha variant of COVID died out sometime in 2020, probably July. So that not only is it not a vaccine, it's not for it's obsolete because it's you know, trying to teach your body to make immunity for something that doesn't exist. And I don't see that in any of these publications or in these court cases. So they're giving something that's not a vaccine for a non-existent virus, you know, and they're mandating something that's against, you know, the Constitution about the right of you to be safe and secure in your person, and against due process, and against
now,
all these other amendments. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, soon coming to an area near you, the fourth jab.
Oh, really? They're up to four now?
Yes, they're up to four.
Well, see, now, see, but the vaccine systematically lowers, and I call the vaccine out of convenience, all right? So the shot, the COVID shot, actually lowers your immunity. We had that on the Natural News broadcast. You lose 5% of your immunity per week after you've had a jab, okay? So your natural immunity without anything is like 99%+. Okay.
That's interesting because doctors are telling people that the jab actually helps. If they had COVID and you get the jab, I was told you had to wait 3 months. Now you don't have to wait 3 months because, you know, because you're just better off. If you had COVID and you get the jab, that just makes you even more better off.
Now let's do what we usually do here, which is apply logic and reason. If you get, what is it, 70 trillion, messenger RNA bits per vaccine, you know, into your cells, or maybe that's the wrong number, but it's a ridiculous amount of messenger RNA that's in this vaccine. If each cell, messenger is instructions, so each messenger RNA instruction is designed to teach cells how to make stuff. Well, why do you, you know, once your body knows how to make stuff, why do you have to keep reteaching it how to make stuff if it already knows how to make it? See, there's another flaw. Yeah. Go ahead, Pianki. Yeah.
See, our education system is ridiculous. Hmm. The largest immune system that you have is your skin.
Yeah.
Look at the billions of viruses that's on your skin that's trying to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Your immune is built from inside. Skin is not built from the outside in. It's built from the inside out. When you have a cut, what do your immune system do? It puts a shield over that wound until it can do what it needs to do. That shield is called a scab.
Yeah.
Why do we have so many dumb people nowadays?
Well, I think they've started to rely on experts. They've been taught not to trust their own judgment. They've been lied to that the government, that the courts actually interpret the law when they're not supposed to do that at all. They're supposed to use it. Same with the Constitution. And they doubt their own abilities of logic and reason. So critical thinking skills have actually reduced the ability of people to think critically and reduced them to reciting parrot lines from talking points. Gene, go ahead.
I think a lot of people just put too much faith in the government and they think the government's going to take care of them. But I mean, if you look at what's going on now, even how many, what airline now, is it American that had to cancel over 1,000 flights over the weekend?
Oh,
they're
Southwest
not saying it was,
yeah.
And
Southwest
they and it's not because of the jab and their mandates. Oh no, I don't know what it is about then, but that's what they said.
Yeah. Okay. These are all good points. I'm not trying to gloss over them, but I want to get to our focus here.
I got one more thing to say, real quick.
Okay.
Let me add this one more. You ever notice how a dog would lick its wounds? That's because its saliva is alkaline. If you lick your wound, what happens? It burns like hell, so you stop because yours is acid. That's where your digestion starts in your mouth.
Right. Well, and that's by the way, saliva works on mosquito bites too. Not only does it work on cuts and scrapes, it works. It'll stop a mosquito bite from hurting it deflates it immediately. So saliva is your natural antibiotic. That's why it's in your mouth to stop infections from coming in your mouth. And people and on your food and all the things you eat. I mean, saliva is like your first antibiotic. Your first antiviral. And so saliva does amazing things. So licking wounds actually, starts the healing process. So they heal from underneath with cells that go after infection. It heals from above and it forms a scab. I mean, your body has an amazing design to it. People don't know that. So, I hate to say it, next time you get a mosquito bite, put some saliva on it. Sounds disgusting, but it works. It's your natural immune. All right. So the governor, what the governor did that I think is so clever, not only did he outline the Parents' Bill of Rights, which I looked up, chapter 1014, but he also says, he says, and other lines, and he says specifically, the legislature should consider legislation too. And this is where I believe one of the first things about the citizen legislation is you don't reinvent the wheel. If someone has a good bill, you don't have to write one. Support that bill, okay? If someone has good ideas and good provisions, put them in your bill. You know, if they're already in a bill, support it. You know, so don't reinvent things. So he's got this list here. It's just fascinating. He says, specifically, the legislature should protect current and prospective employees against unfair discrimination on the basis of COVID-19 vaccination status and ensure robust enforcement for this protection. Okay, now there's got to be a chapter in law where that can go. There's another one here. Ensure that educational institutions and government entities are prohibited from unfairly discriminating against current and prospective employees, students, and residents on the basis of COVID-19 vaccination status. There's another thing that's got to be right in the discrimination parts or the civil rights parts of Florida statutes. Third, ensure that employees improperly denied employment on the basis of COVID-19 vaccination status can be eligible for re-employment benefits and, if needed, ensure that employees injured by COVID-19 vaccination taken pursuant to a company policy are covered by workers' compensation. Okay, this is the legislation that specifically they won't do, you know, that Paul Renner guy. But if you're injured, that's considered on the job, you know, and so all this stuff needs, so what we can do is actually we can go into the laws and look and see where this is and put it in our bill. We just have to cite the law where the place in Florida law where it should go. Now, the governor's not legislating for the legislature. He's hoping they will do it. But if they won't do it, we'll do it. He says appropriate a sufficient amount of funds to investigate complaints regarding COVID-19 mandates and to take legal action against such mandates. So in other words, he wants the government to go after people that are mandating against the wishes of the government to mandate. That's pretty cool. Here's one of the big ones. Excuse me. Clarify that the Parents' Bill of Rights, chapter 1014, that's the third time he's mentioned that, so I can take a hint. So I've got chapter 1014. Okay. This is chapter 1014 of Florida statutes vests the decision on masking with parents, not government entities, and that schools must comply with Department of Health rules that govern student health, including rules that ensure, here we go, healthy students can remain in school. Okay, that goes against all those school boards that are quarantining healthy people. He limits mandates by school districts, provide adequate enforcement to ensure Florida law is followed, direct the state to evaluate whether it should assist jurisdiction over occupational safety and health issues. That would be a state OSHA. Okay. Gene, can you look up real quick, tell me if Florida has an OSHA? It has an occupational self and hasty, sorry, that was a spoonerism, occupational safety and health administration at the state level.
What? Because every state should have it. It's a federal government mandated thing.
No, because the states are independent. The states don't have to have one at all.
Wow, because every state I've worked in, they talked about OSHA.
Okay. Well, Florida's included. It should be a state one. States are free to do it, but they're not mandated by the federal government. The federal government can't mandate states to create a department like that. That's not their job. In fact, the federal government has no constitutional jurisdiction over occupational safety and health either, just to quote the 10th Amendment. And the last one here, repeal the authority of the state health officer to order forced injections or vaccinations under section 381.00315. Well, if that isn't a big slap in the face, I don't know what is. It's like, wake up, boom, you know, repeal the authority. And this is something, and the reason this one came up, this was all over the internet about like a year ago for about 6 months. That it's right there in statute, Florida statute 381.00315, that people can be ordered to take vaccinations. And we all screamed at that. So wait a minute, you can't do that. And so we're going to have to change that. And the last one, create as necessary public records exemptions related to complaints and investigations described herein. I'm not sure about the records. We're going to have to look into that more and more. Anyway, that was the governor's proclamation of October 29th.
Okay. Yes, they do have OSHA.
We do have an OSHA. What's it called specifically?
It says the federal – wait. Hold on. Let me get back here.
I'm going to have to look up their certificate, their authorizing legislation.
Hold on. It just says Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
Okay. That's not Florida's then.
Pardon me. It's Florida Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
Okay. So Florida. So there is a Florida OSHA. Okay. That's fine. We'll be addressing
that. Yep, and they're they're all over the state.
Okay.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different ones.
Ooh. Oh, they are getting complicated. Okay, so here's how I do things. And of course, I'd be curious if anybody else wants to. And everybody's free to write their own versions of a bill. You know, we can put them together. You can send them independently. I don't care. We might have, you know, when this gets big, we might have 10 versions of the same bill, you know, going to Congress, because people are free to write their own bills. And I approve bills for writeyourlaws.com that I disagree with, because it's not my job to know everything, to be responsible for everything. Someone wants to write a bill and they want to run with it, go for it. You know, who knows who's to say that they don't have something that I didn't think of or didn't think was a good idea that actually really is a good idea. So people are free to do that too. See, the thing about Action Radio is that I don't, you know, rule over everybody. You don't have to, you know, send the bills that I approve. You can write your own. You can disagree. You can comment. You can take any bill that you want and send it around. You can, I'm hoping that talk show hosts, I'd love to show them how to be action hosts, and we can get people writing bills all over the country, and we can turn, you know, various radio audiences into lobbying groups. I mean, that's the whole goal here. This is going to be a worldwide movement. I'll tell you who's really picking up on this. Again, it's Russia, our Russian audience. It's like, so where the hell did they come from? So Russia, hey, listen, so that's with you. Как ваше, you know, feel free to call in. We got a Skype line. Go ahead.
Let me make a comment on OSHA.
Okay.
The states make those safeties on workplace comes from the state, unless you're on a federal job. Mm-hmm. If you're on a federal job, the Corps engineers write a safety, which is called the Yellow Book.
Okay.
I've done a project, a geospatial project, and we had a yellow book that was required to follow when it came down to the safety procedures.
Hmm.
Now, and then if we're not on that job, we had what was called OSHA, which apparently the states approved. You're right. The federal government should not be coming into a state dictating to workers on how they should be working. If anyone should do it, it should be the insurance companies that make those policies, because every contractor has to have a safety program that their workers have to abide by. And in that program, it talks about safety, how to use this and the other in personal safety to prevent falls. So you're absolutely right. There's a difference between the federal government safety program and that which is written by the states.
Yeah.
Unless the states give them authority to do so.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, now the reason I'm the little hesitation is because I've actually had to bring my keyboard over, because this is what we do that no one has ever not only done before but even thought of, as far as I know, and that's actually writing legislation on the air. And so what I'm doing now is I've got the first section that the governor mentioned as proclamation is the Parents' Bill of Rights, Florida Statute 1014. So if anybody wants to follow along with what I'm doing, just put FLA.STAT. And you can write section. They have a weird symbol for section. I don't think it's on your keyboards. It's not on mine. Just put Florida Statute, you know, 1014.04. And it's the parental rights section. Okay. So this is what they're talking about. So to let people know, it's not a mystery. You know, people think of the law as this mystical kingdom like Camelot, where, you know, you can only enter if you pull, you know, Excalibur from the stone, that there's some sort of magical, mystical knowledge that lawyers are the only ones who can write laws. Lawyers are the only ones who can understand laws. Judges are the only ones who can interpret laws. It's all BS. And I wish I could use the full word, but I won't. But it's all BS. None of that is true. They safeguard their jobs and their kingdom by telling you that you can't do it. And I'm here to tell you, you can. And I'm going to show you just how easy it is to amend laws, to write laws in bills and propose them to the various legislative branches. It's no big mystery. In fact, the more I do this, the more I realize how simple it is. And the more I realize how I've been lied to my entire life. Because I used to think the same thing. You know, when I first started this, you know, there was no guideline. There was no, you know, citizen's guide to citizen legislation. There wasn't one. It didn't exist, right? So we're kind of, you know, and every time I sort of, you know, force my way into another level, you know, it's like a video game. Right? I go crashing to the next level and go, well, that wasn't so tough. It's really fascinating. All right. So if you have your laptops, if you can pull up Florida Statute Section 1014.04, this is parental rights. Okay. Now, it says Section 1, they have one in parentheses. All parental rights are reserved to a parent of a minor child in this state without obstruction or interference from the state, any of its political subdivisions, any other government entity, or any other institution, including but not limited to all the following rights of a parent and a minor child in the state. Okay, that sounds really good. Okay, but then they put in this little section. This is Section A, the right to direct education and care of his or her minor child. B, the right to direct the upbringing and the moral or religious training of his or her minor child. That would assume that the state and the schools can't do it, right? You would think so, okay? C, the right pursuant to Section 1002.20, Section 2, B, and 6. Okay, those are record-keeping requirements and things that I'm just starting to look at, but I don't think they as directly apply. Sometimes they'll do that. They have these little sideline issues. And I know this is going to be a dry show. People are listening and slogging through it. But understand that this is the most critical thing, and it's dry and it's kind of tedious and it's like a detective story, but these are the things that affect your lives. These are the things that the legislators are not reading because they find it boring. They'd rather be at a fundraiser. They'd rather be shaking the hands of Big Pharma and getting a check. Okay, we don't do that here. But once you understand the legislative process, and if you especially become fascinated by it, this is the key to the kingdom, folks. If we start writing the laws that we consent to be governed by, it's over for big anything. All right. So let me pursue this here. It says the right pursuant to Section da 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 to apply to enroll his or her minor child in a public school or as an alternative to public education, a private school. Okay. So the first thing I want to do is I'm going to put this right here. I'm going to put it right on my form. I got a whole form for this already. I'm going to get the right one. Where it says here, Florida Statute 1014, C, remove those words as an alternative to public education. How's that sound? It's not. Private schools, religious schools, home education program are not an alternative to public education. They are an education. But they're being looked at like an alternative party or an alternative treatment or alternative medicine. It's not as good. You know, but it's not as good as the main one. But you know, and I want your opinion on that. Should I in the bill take out the words as an alternative to in 1C? Who's got an opinion?
Well, no, you said it right. You said it right. They are an education. Before there was traditional school, children was educated in the home. It was educated with the closeness of their parents. Birds, the mama bird, don't take their baby birds to no university, to no school. They educate their child how to come out of the nest and fly.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's another part. It gets worse. After it says as an alternative to public education, it says a private school, including a religious school, a home education program, or other available options. And then it says the most dangerous words, I believe, in any Bill of Rights, as authorized by law. Oops.
You know another thing, too.
Wait. No, I want you to deal with this.
Okay.
I'll let you make your point. But I want because if this is a Bill of Rights and they can make a law against controlling or restricting your rights, that'd be like saying the Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed except as prescribed by law.
Well, that's because people have been conditioned and educated away from the powers that they have.
Okay, now here's the thing, though. What about those four words? Do we leave them in or do we take them out?
Say them again. Say those words again.
Okay. Go back a little bit here. Read the right pursuant to apply or enroll his or her minor child in a public school, a private school, because I've already taken out those words as an alternative, including a religious school, a home education program, or other available options as authorized by law.
Well, then that's where we go getting the problem again, because now they're still looking to the law to make it possible for them to do that. I guess you can.
What if they make homeschooling
make
it expensive?
Then the law can say that. If you look to the law to authorize you to do one thing, the law can authorize you not to do that thing. So that has to be carefully constructed.
writing here, don't mind me. I'm going to make a command decision. I'm deleting it. I don't like it.
They can't say you can't do homeschooling or you can't have homeschooling. No, they aren't going to be able to do that.
Well, it just says it's authorized by law. If your rights are authorized by law, they're not rights. That's the point I'm making. Why would they put that in there?
You should just put in there a parent is authorized, a parental authorization. That's the law, parental authorization.
There you go. So here's how it reads now. The right pursuant to, I'll check those later, to apply to enroll his or her minor child in a public school, private school, including a religious school, a home education program, or other available options. So you have the right pursuant to this to apply. So in other words, you have the right to I just took out as authorized by law or other available options. Well, here's the thing. Most parents are responsible. They're not going to, send their kids to basket weaving school and pay, $50,000 tuition. Well, maybe some do. I don't know. But you have the right to be stupid. But the thing is, I wrote an education bill, actually an education article, that included a total education system completely designed by parents and children, especially as the kids get older, for their education. In other words, you could include, internships in high school at, garages, mechanical shops if they wanted to go into auto mechanical stuff. It included ballet classes, it included archery, it included poetry, it included anything you wanted to do, acting classes. So education, I really broadly defined education as pretty much anything you wanted. Flying lessons, okay? That was part of my education, huge part of my education. It wasn't covered by the public schools, of course, but what I learned about flying taught me things about life, about accomplishment, about physics, about weather, about mechanical stuff. I learned an incredible amount. So why couldn't I get academic credit for that? I ran a business, when I was 19, airplane washing and waxing and lawn mowing. I ran a business and I had a best friend and I, we put this together. We built a trailer. We had airplane cleaning stuff in my trunk of my old Dodge. We had the lawnmowers in the trailer. We did the advertising. We did the marketing. We did the accounting, we made contracts. We did everything the businesses do at 19. And I went to the business school at the University of Massachusetts and said, I've done this whole business. Can you give me business credit? Well, no. How about an internship? Well, no. Well, why not? I just ran a business successfully. I made a 5,000% profit from my initial investment, whatever. It was a lot of money. And I said, well, no, you don't. You haven't taken any business courses. You don't know what you're doing. And that's when I said, you idiots. I just did what you people haven't even done yourselves. Run a successful business. Well, screw you. I'm leaving. So I didn't, that was my extent of my interaction with the business department at the University of Massachusetts. But that's the thing. If you're actually doing it, why shouldn't you be able to get academic credit for it? So I take out that as authorized by law, because a lot of things they don't authorize.
Mm-hmm. PhDs have been given to students, and they couldn't find anybody that understood the thesis better than the student. Mm-hmm. That has happened. So you just gave an example.
Thank you. 1E, we're going to take out again another little thing here. They have 1E, unless otherwise prohibited by law. See, the thing is, they can make up anything for that. I have to step away from the mic and type something, so make a comment. I'll be listening.
We have to get back to the parental judgment and parental responsibility. The law does not give the parent. The parent was already born with that. I mean, it began with that. When they gave birth to that child, the whereabouts, the well-being of that child is based on the judgment and the responsibility of the parent, not the legislature. The legislature put things in place all to protect the child, from harm and misuse. But the school education that child received is based on the judgment and the responsibility of the parents.
Agreed. But what I'm trying to do is take out the ability of the legislature to write laws against the rights of parents. Because if they say otherwise prescribed by law, anywhere else they want to stick a law that limits the rights of parents, they can say, well, you have parental rights. We gave you parental rights. Section 1014.04, those are your parental rights. And they said, but you have this other law that says we don't have those rights. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but where did the legislature get their rights from? The legislature get their rights, their power from the people, which includes parents. Take it back home.
Yeah. I got another one here for you, too. I found this interesting. The right to consent in writing before the state or any of its political subdivisions makes a video or voice recording of his or her minor child And here's what gets interesting. Unless such recording is made during or as part of a court proceeding or is made part of a forensic interview in a criminal or Department of Children and Families investigation or is to be used solely for the following purposes. And they have some other things, safety demonstration, a purpose related to a legitimate academic or extracurricular activity, a purpose related to regular classroom instruction, security or surveillance, and a photo identification card. This really bothered me. Okay, and we may take several days on this. We're, you know, this is going to be a process to get this done. But why, if you have the right to consent in writing before the state or any of its political subdivisions makes a video of or voice recording of your kid, why all these exceptions? You know, should your kid be able to go to make a recording for court if you're not there? Should they be able to do interviews for the Department of Children and Families without your consent? Now, here's the exception. The only exception I can see is if the parent who's being investigated, you know, wants to be on and course the child of what to say. That's different. So I wouldn't deny, you know, police and child services the ability to investigate, you know, but one parent certainly has to be there or some kind of family consent. This idea that they can just make these recordings. And we know that we've done show after show after show of the dangers of Child Protective Services, basically stealing kids. They're taking kids in New York when the parents are, they say, well, you're not vaccinated. You can't have your kid from the hospital. I mean, that's a real case. All right. There are judges that tried to take kids from parents that hadn't got the COVID shot either. You know, so this idea that they can record, make secret recordings, make recordings as part of an investigation, that has to be really looked at, I think. Jean?
Well,
or Pianchi?
Well, Pritchard, the governor of Illinois, I think, just signed the law stating that a child can get an abortion at without the parents' knowledge. Parents, okay. Jean, they're taking your children. You birthed that child into this world. What are you, just the birthers? Then they take over the child and apply the child to whatever devious scheme that they have?
I think that's what they're trying to do now, yes. They're saying that parents don't know. The government knows how to raise the child. The parents don't.
Yeah, I'm just reading this over. I'm looking at it. I'm thinking to myself, I don't know how to rewrite this now. I've got to look more into it. But Section 1J I find very troubling. With all the extra power these people are getting. Pull up my I'm not really looking at live chat right now, so if something comes up, I put a little note. Let's see if I can reach around my microphone here. So let's do rewrite after checking on, well, how am I going to phrase this, on video ability. So, yeah, there's something about that thing that bothers me. And I don't think if parental rights are – in other words, they have all these exceptions. And there's too many exceptions. So I'm going to work on one. Then they have the Section 2, the next one. So that was just Part 1. There's only a couple parts to this. So Section does not let's see if I got that right. Okay. Here's one for you. It says this section does not authorize a parent of a minor child in the state to engage in conduct that is unlawful or to abuse or neglect his or her minor child in violation of the general law. Okay. That makes sense. You can't use parental rights to abuse your kid. Jean, Pianchi?
Well, yeah, you can't abuse your child.
Okay. So then why do they have Section B, condone, authorize, approve, or apply this section to a parental action or decision that would end life?
Huh? Well, you're right. A child is born as a citizen of the state, which deserves to be protected as any citizen deserves to be. But you can't go beyond the responsibilities of the child. I mean, the parent. I'm sorry.
Well, wait a minute. No, I agree with you, but wait a minute here. They just said the section does not authorize a parent to be abusive, but it does authorize a parent to end life. Did you guys get that? This is an abortion provision.
Well, ending life is being abusive, isn't it? That's one of the extreme.
But wait a minute. But of course it is. But it says here this session does not authorize a parent of a minor child in this state to engage in conduct that is unlawful or to, well, that could be anything, or to abuse or neglect his or her minor child in violation of the general law. In other words, you can't abuse your kids. The very next part, B, says condone, authorize, approve, or apply to a parental action or decision that would end life. That, to me, is code for abortion.
The abortion is... Some abortionists came before you did and wrote that in. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, why is that there? You know, if you can't abuse, you know, but what else is fascinating about this is if it says that would end life, what they're acknowledging is that life already began. Oops. It's right here. Florida Code. I'm just reading right from the law. Section 1014.04. Subsection 2B, condone, authorize, approve, or apply to a parental action or decision that would end life. The parental rights.
And what they're saying,
the state can't, they
what
can't
they're saying
that.
Basically,
uh-huh.
Yeah, what they're saying basically is that life began when? At conception.
Yeah. Well, it certainly began before the decision to end life. Okay. Now, for those that are following along with Action Radio and what we do here, there is a bill that I wrote with a lot of – in fact, I don't think, Gene, I think this was before you got here.
Yes.
But we wrote a bill with the help of a lot of conservative women because I didn't feel that I should write this. I'm a guy. But I really want a lot of – but I actually wrote the language. I came up with the initial concept. But I ran it by a bunch of folks. Karen Hoffman was particularly helpful. She used to be our special investigations reporter. People come and go from the show. It's really too bad. Everybody would just stay. But anyway and the whole premise was that the state could not prevent an abortion that would terminate a pregnancy. On the other hand, the parent, the mother, could not have an abortion that would kill the child. So in other words, it separated the two events. So there's an abortion. Abortion was redefined as terminating the pregnancy, but that could not happen unless you could save the life of the baby, which was a contingent part of it. So it separated into saving the baby from the ending of the pregnancy. See, now they're inextricably linked. That an abortion automatically means you kill the baby. But why does it have to? My whole question was, wait a minute. We've got medical science has advanced so much since Roe v. Wade, which is an illegal decision anyway. We'll talk about that another day. Why is it that you can save a baby at 22 weeks, but you have to kill it at 40-whatever weeks? I mean, I'm not sure how this all works. 39 weeks. That doesn't make any sense to me. You can have abortions without killing the baby. Well, that's a whole new thought. So in other words, the state isn't so oppressive that it says that women cannot, you know, must – have a pregnancy. But on the other hand, it says that, well, this is another life. It's not your body. It's not your choice. You know, it's the choice of this life, you know, the baby's life. It's separate, as separate from both the mother and the father in terms of genetics and being an independent human being. So that's how I wrote that bill. And we'll see what happens. That's separate from this issue, but I just find it. But there is a way to start talking about something that would, you know, not take away, you know, a mother's choice to terminate a pregnancy, but it would take away her parental rights, obviously. If you terminate a pregnancy, you don't want to be a mother, you know, and that would give the father the option of actually being a father. Or he could then choose, you know, adoption or things like that too. But you can't kill a baby as part of an abortion. That's what I'm saying. And that's like a revolutionary change in the debate. Comments? Dump the panel. You're all thinking. That's okay. You can think about it. I just found that interesting. That I'm going to take out that section. So we're just going to delete section 2B because I don't like it. Now, if they want to have an abortion bill in there, then say so. Don't be dishonest about it. That's what I'm saying. I have to type for a minute. So if you guys want to comment, feel free. Okay.
I think it just shows that we really have to pay attention to what's going on and. Just don't skim over things. Really look into it, read into them. So that way you know all the facts versus what you think.
Yeah. They've got a couple more questions here I'm not sure about. It says prohibit a court of competent jurisdiction, law enforcement officer, or employees of a government agency that is responsible for child welfare, that would be CPS, from acting in his or her official capacity within the reasonable and prudent scope of his or her authority. Well, wait a minute. Isn't that the problem with family court? Isn't that the problem with guardians? Guardian ad litems? Isn't that the problem with child protective services and social workers and psychologists? That they're doing horrible things to kids right now? And this just authorizes courts of what they call competent jurisdiction, law enforcement, employees of a government agency. You know, if they do things that are, quote, reasonable and prudent in the scope of his or her authority, what the hell does that mean? That doesn't sound like a right of parents. That sounds like a right of government. Comments? I'm going to write that in. I kind of like that comment. Not a right of parents, a right of government. Of course, government doesn't have rights. I'm going up to the microphone as I reach around it to write this. It's going to be an interesting day. All right, let's save it. So we're almost done with this section. Then I'm going to play you a couple things. The last section, let me see. This is section three. An employee of the state, any of its political subdivisions, or any governmental entity who encourages or coerces or attempts to encourage or coerce a minor child to withhold information from his or her parent may be subject to disciplinary action. I would say shall be subject to disciplinary action. You guys like that provision? Have I bored you all today?
That's a good point. Now you talk about the state of Florida. I just got you telling you what the state of Illinois, what the governor just done, giving a child the right to have something done to their body without letting the parent know.
Parents need to know.
They do. Now, here's a good disclaimer, too. It says, a parent of a minor child in the state has inalienable rights that are more comprehensive than those listed in the section. Well, that's good. Unless such rights have been legally waived or terminated, and they will be terminated through, you know, due process. This chapter does not prescribe all rights to a parent of a minor child in the state unless required by law. Oh, there it is again. Unless required by law. The rights of the parent of a minor child in this state may not be limited or denied. This chapter may not be construed to apply to a parental action or decision that would end life. Oh, wait a minute. Where'd that come from? Didn't we just hear that in Section B? There it is again. This chapter may not be construed to apply to a parental action or decision that would end life. Just want you to know it's in the Florida Code, folks.
Yeah, it was an abortionist that put that in. Here's another point, too. A child should not be subject to abuse. Abuse can come into form when you have a biological male child that you want to change their gender, or you encourage them to think as if they are a female.
Now that's a brilliant idea. Let's call this a new section. So parents shall not have the right to change the gender of their child. That should be the responsibility of people who reach adulthood?
Of the child when they become of age.
Okay. All right. No, this is good. This is how we write legislation, folks. I would never have thought of that. Parents shall not have the right to change the gender of their child either through medical, psychological, or other means of what? Coercion?
Well, it's something you're going to have to think it on. You know, the State Department says you cannot renounce the citizenship of your child. If you want to renounce your citizenship as a United States citizen, you, a parent, have the right to do so,
yeah, that's
but
federal,
you cannot
though.
Do that for your own child until they become grown.
Well, I mean, there's precedent for what we're talking about here, but this would be a great thing to do. You know, we could actually write a kid's bill of rights. They have the right to their original gender.
You know, I don't think you need to do that, because now what you're starting to do is getting into the Declaration of Human Rights.
Yeah, you're
Declaration
right.
Declaration of Human Rights. Yeah, if you ever read, you need to read that, and that'll give you some ideas, because what they do is give the child the right to pay no attention to their parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I finished with Section 1014. I think we got some good things. So that doesn't need a ton of amending. What I want to do when I get through this discussion is I want to go back and read over the governor's, you know, things that he wants to do. he wants the legislature to do. And then, you know, between now and November 9th, I'm going to see how many sections I can find, how many places I can incorporate it, and then present that bill to the rally. And then, of course, from there directly to, you know, the media and the government and the press release. We do press releases now. So we're kind of a busy place here. So I'm going to take a break. I want to get to Florida Statute 381. And so if you want to follow along, if you're following along at home, either live or podcast, we're going to deal with Section 381. This is Florida Statute, Section 381.0012. And the big one that has, you know, mandatory vaccine force by any means necessary, 381.00315. So that's what we're going to deal with in a little bit. But a great audience so far. Let's keep going. But let me play you our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for this week. I'm going to play you a couple of shorter ones just in the interest of time. So let me tell you how it all got started, and then I'll play you, I think, my Declaration of Independence one. Yeah, let's do that. Where's my intro here? Here it is. Okay, so back in a couple minutes, and we'll pick up the remaining chapter. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com, srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled "What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery," December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. "We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government, that we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Who says we don't have fun here? All right, let's get back. We've got Dr. Price going to join us. I keep forgetting. I'm so used to him joining us at 7:30. I'm sort of like wired for that. He'll be here at 8 o'clock. So we have about 45 minutes to hash over stuff and see what we want to do. Comments? Any general comments over? Anything that I'm neglecting? Anything you think I should be covering? Anything?
I have no comments about what you're writing so far.
Okay. I'll turn this into an actual bill.
You say one key thing.
What's that?
About unalienable rights.
Uh-huh.
Unalienable rights that was given to you by God. God the Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, which is unseen. And I'm not a religious person, by the way. Well, goodness gracious, how obvious is this all anyway?
Yeah. Good question. like I say, once you get in the nuts and bolts, you realize that the people that wrote this, they're not geniuses. They just put stuff in. They keep putting these little qualifiers in, like, authorized by law or not prohibited by law. Well, anytime you mention rights, you'll notice that nothing in the Bill of Rights ever has a condition in it. The Second Amendment, let's take the First Amendment. In other words, you have the right to freely express your religion unless prohibited by law. Are you kidding? To quote Gene, there's no way that would ever exist. You couldn't do it because it's so against what we stand for as people that you can't make qualifiers like that. All right. I'm going to sort of avoid, a live chat unless Gene specifically hears something. So let's go back. I got my audit sheet. Let me get to my bill sheet. All right, let's get to the big one. Let me read you a couple things too, because one of the things, let me go back and forth here. All right, so section Florida Statute 381.0012. This is the enforcement authority. This is from the public health laws. Okay, so you want to definitely get to know section 381. Statutes, codes, regulations, da 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 da. It's the enforcement authority for public health. So we've got the Brandel Bill of Rights. That's one thing. But you get into this stuff, this gets to be messy. And it's talking about enforcers. Is the department may commence and maintain all proper and necessary actions and proceedings to enforce rules adopted. A lot of this is BS. I'm not sure how it all applies. The department may commence, maintain all proper and necessary. All right. So what I wanted to do in this enforcement section is add a provision that the Constitution is still supreme to any action by the public health department, that your rights are still supreme to any orders that these people issue. That due process still applies, so you can't be quarantined, excuse me, unless you're proven sick. That's one of the big problems with the whole lockdown, is they're locking down healthy people. You can't lock down people in prevention. We think you might get sick, therefore we're going to close down your entire industry, but we're going to keep the other people open because, they're bigger and they contribute to our campaigns. So I wrote a couple things here. That I want to put in this section.
That's what they do to criminals.
What's that?
They quarantine criminals to keep them from hurting other citizens.
Well, no, quarantine is a medical term. What they do is they incarcerate criminals. The purpose, they call it the Department
Same
of Corrections.
Thing.
I don't think so. I think I would disagree.
It puts you over here so that you don't hurt somebody over there.
Yeah, but there's a difference between a communicable disease and a violent person. So I think in law they would make that, they would make a distinction between between quarantine and incarceration. That's all the distinction I'm making. But you actually, you know, you have one of the best lines of Action Radio ever when you said the Constitution doesn't have an on and an off switch. You know, you can't do that. And the whole basis of what the public health people did across the country was they basically said, yeah, it does have an on and off switch. And if there's an emergency, we can dictate whatever we want. And that's simply not true. And so I want to put a provision in 381.0012. I've got a couple of different versions of it. This is just writings. I just rambling wrote. And some of this is from messages. Some of this is from other stuff. I just, you know, dash stuff down and go, oh, that's pretty good. Maybe I should include that. So I have one here on a no vaccine mandate bill. It says constitutional declaration of individual rights as supreme to any public health law, order, treatment, vaccine, device, or any recommendation. Citizens of Florida shall be fully informed and shall give their full consent before any public health or medical interaction. Such consent shall be free of all influence, coercion, or force of mandate. Only through due process of accurate testing with positive results for a dangerous communicable disease shall any individual be quarantined, and then only to the extent necessary to be non-contagious. How's that for a little disclaimer at the top of their authority? You all thinking? Thinking's good.
I guess it's okay, yeah.
Okay. Additions?
Well,
did I leave anything out? You want to add to it? Go ahead, Pinky.
Well, go ahead and bill it, and we're inspected after you get it built to tell you what the flaws are.
Okay, well, that's fine. Yeah, it's hard to hear it just on reading it. I'll post all this stuff when I post the bill. I had another one, too. I wrote, the citizens of Florida shall have full body autonomy and cannot be forced, coerced, incentivized, or influenced in any way into taking into their body a medical drug, product, device, or other medical entity without full knowledge, understanding, and consent. I should probably say intervention rather than entity, but anyway. No jeopardy shall be placed on their person, their employment, their assets, their family, their travel, their driver's license, any professional licenses, or any other factor that could possibly cause them to make any decision not of their own free will. That's my no vaccine mandate.
It kind of reminds me of how they used to sterilize people because they thought they wasn't mentally fit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's another version. I could combine them as well. But that's the kind of language I'm looking to put into 381.0012. And I just put other notes in here. So a lot of times when I write a bill, so folks are wondering how this process works, I just put notes down. I put a bunch of notes down and kind of plug them in. And I figure, where are the problems? What do we need to do? You know, where do we need to fix things? And it looks like we need to fix the Parental Bill of Rights. We need to add something to the authority here, and we need to take away authority in 381.00315. But I'll get to that. Well, that's probably the wrong number. Let me give you the exact number here. Where have I got it? Yeah, 381.00315. Yeah, I was right. So I wrote also down here, doctors shall be free to prescribe successful known treatments for infections and diseases despite not being recommended or authorized by the FDA, CDC, NIH because of the oppressive influence and control exerted over such federal agencies by the pharmaceutical industry. Do you like that one? That's the hydroxychloroquine amendment or the ivermectin amendment. That should be in there too.
Well, yeah, and a doctor shouldn't forcibly inject people without their knowledge of what they're being injected. That goes back to the 1930s when white males was injected with malaria against their will in order to fight. What was they fighting? They was fighting, can't think of, oh, they was fighting. No, that's not it. But white males was
Rough Riders or what?
Injected. No, this was the 1930s. I can't think of the doctor's name. And people never talk about this, but the white males was injected with malaria to fight something. Syphilis, in order to fight syphilis. They had syphilis, and the doctors injected them with malaria. Actually, what they was doing is thermal treatment because malaria causes your temperature to rise. You get a fever. And the object was for the fever to kill the malaria, the syphilis. So, Gene, you knew that, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I got a thing here. I'm writing down all vaccines shall have full documentation of all ingredients of, you know, available on public websites, including any known or suspected adverse effects. I'll do this language. I'm just going to write it now. Health consequences. No. Or any knowledge of long-term effects. Or short-term effects. So all this stuff's going to go into these bills. Some of these might go into the Parental Bill of Rights. They might go into the authority. I think this is probably more for the authority, because this is really needs amending. The Parental Bill of Rights, we just need to take out mostly the, you know, unless authorized by law. So that's that section. Okay, let's get to the big one here. And the big one is 381.00315, particularly number 4. This is the one that somebody found. You know, apparently it was done in 2002, and the governor specifically says this has to change. So let me give you the what the law says here, according to here. The department, I've got the right section. Let me just double check. Yes, 3.05, or is it D? Hang on, let me think. Where's 4? Yeah, here we go. Ordering an individual to be examined, tested, vaccinated, treated, isolated or quarantined for communicable diseases that have significant morbidity or mortality and present a severe danger to public health. Individuals who are unable or unwilling to be examined, tested, vaccinated, or treated for reasons of health, religion, or conscience may be subjected to isolation or quarantine. Examinations is Here you go. I think it's 4B is the one they're talking about. If there is no practical method to isolate or quarantine the individual, the state health officer may use any means necessary to vaccinate or treat the individual. What do y'all think of that? Ooh.
I think that's backwards.
Repeat what you just said.
Okay. Section 4. B, second sentence, if there's no practical method to isolate or quarantine the individual, the state health officer may use any means necessary to vaccinate or treat the individual. There's no definition for any means necessary.
No.
I mean, that comes with the rhetorical heading. Yeah, think about that. But it's there. Go ahead, Bianchi.
If you quarantine the individual, that means they already have it. I thought a vaccination is designed to prevent them from getting it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Right.
You know, if you're, this whole idea of in fact, that goes to the whole premise of vaccination. You know, if we can establish that, and it's pretty, I mean, doctors have been saying this for months now, that the alpha strain died out sometime in 2020, that you're vaccinating for the alpha strain, which doesn't exist, that you're requiring people to take an experimental medicine where no long-term effects are known for something that doesn't exist, that to me should ban, you know, the vaccines, you know, anyway. Now, if they want to do vaccines for the Delta variant, fine. You know, if you want to, I won't take one, but you can't mandate them. I mean, the vaccines are the things that are creating the variants, because the vaccines, and like I say, I use the word out of convenience, only teach your body to go after a certain part of the virus, whereas your natural immunity goes after all parts of the virus. That's why they don't work.
Absolutely. You
know, this is where immunity is so
and
much
if
better.
You're going to quarantine a person, quarantine them until their natural immune system does what it should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Here's another section. Section C, any order of the state health officer given to effectuate this paragraph is immediately enforceable by a law enforcement officer under 381.0012. In other words, if the state health department orders it, and if there's no practical way to quarantine an individual and it's ordered that they take a vaccination, law enforcement can force one into your body. That's what this says.
I just got a question. DeSantis mm-hmm. and his whoever party, whatever group of people wrote this?
No, this is the state law. This law was written back in 2002. What DeSantis is doing, and rightly so, and I congratulate him for it, he wants the state legislature to change this. to update
yeah.
it.
This
now
is,
you can see
yeah.
why.
Wow, exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, now see back in 2000.
I wonder who was in power in 2000. Who was the governor in 2002?
I don't know. Let's find out. Gene, who was the governor in 2002?
Let's study
him. Let me find out. When was... Well, I'm not even going to say. Hold on.
Yeah, this is the one where...
yes.
Who was it?
Jeb Bush, I think. Hold on. I'm
Oh, Mr.
Yeah,
Globalist? Oh, this is interesting.
Well, no, hold on.
Okay,
we
got time.
He got in November 2002. So that would have been before that. So let's see who was before that. I just
well, not
put,
necessarily.
When was that law enacted?
Well, they have these things are enacted. This one law wasn't all done at once. It's been amended several times. I got a thing at the bottom here. Amended in 2021, 2018, 2015. 2002, 2005, 2010. This thing's been amended.
Who was there before Jeb Bush?
Bunch
okay.
of times.
Well, here it says Robert Ritchie was the governor of Florida from 1993 to 2005. But that don't make any sense. I have to look because... Oh, he ran for president in 2002. So that's maybe how... Well, that don't make any sense.
Well, point is, the governor sucked that time. It's what it sounds like.
Take your time, Gene, and find out who the governor was.
I will.
Yeah, to that, I know this was done. Some of this was done in 2002 because I remember reading that somewhere else. All right, let's go back to the governor's proclamation.
Well, here it says, in May 2001, Florida Governor Jeb Bush signed into law the Florida Election Reform Act. So, yeah, I will keep digging, but that
that's
it
where
sounds
it begins.
Like,
well, no,
this
is the section on public health advisories, public health emergencies, isolation and quarantine.
No, I'm just saying that it says that he was in office in 2001 already. I'm not talking that it was the same bill. Let me just keep digging, though.
Yeah. So I'm going to go through this all. And so if we go back to the governor's proclamation, what the governor specifically said that he's looking for, protects workers against COVID-19 vaccine mandates and addresses employer policies that force COVID-19 vaccination. Okay, so we're going to find, you know, we're going to take away that ability and we redo this law. Clarify the Florida law vests students' masking decisions in the hands of parents and strengthen enforcement of the protections in the Parents' Bill of Rights. Okay, we already know how to do that. So we're going to put a mask provision in there. And we'll do some other things because I think the governor's right on here. But we're going to go beyond that. We're going to put a real constitutional protection in there as well. And then he's got things.
Okay,
you know,
Greg.
Go ahead. What you got?
Jeb Bush was in office from 1999 to 2007.
Now guess what, Greg? You know, I always say that there has been attempts to destroy the fabric of the United States been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you ever wonder why George Bush Jr. is so admirable with Barack Obama, especially when it came down to the Affordable Health Act, better known as Obamacare?
Well, there are
because
bugs,
it takes
obviously.
Away.
Yeah.
Yes. All this is starting to come together.
So here's exactly. So here's what I want to do, and this is what's going to take, the next week. I want to take the provisions that we've come up with, the flaws in the law, document those. I want to take each of these governor provisions, ensure that employees improperly denied employment on the basis of COVID-19 vaccination status could be eligible for reemployment benefits, okay, and workman's comp. Well, I can just add that. I can add that in, you know, to the not the parental rights bill, but the enforcement. You know, just put it right in there. So most of these things, in fact, I could even just post this as is in a bill and say the legislature shall, you know, or consider the governor says specifically the legislature should consider legislation too. So in other words, the governor is really being very open here and saying this is what you need to do, guys. And this is what I'm calling a special session. Now, whether they do it or not, whether they strut around like, you know, pouting little children, or whether they actually do something is going to determine, I think, a lot of their elections. In 2022 as to what they do in this session and what they do in the regular session starting in January. So we'll see. Are they going to be geldings? Are they going to suck up to Big Pharma and Bloomberg, or are they actually going to do the right thing? We don't know. But we've got the laws here to help make a big difference. And even if I don't finish it by rally time, I mean, these things get amended all the time. Bills are very fluid. And the nice thing about the bills that we write is that they're self-correcting. So every time I make an amendment because of a comment or something someone else says, or I find a flaw in it, the next time a person checks in, when they click on the link to the bill, it's automatically corrected. They automatically get the latest version. So I don't have to keep up with people. You know, I don't have to think about who I sent the bill to. And you don't have to think about who you sent it to, because it's always self-correcting. As we change it, it changes it for everybody every time they click in. It's really an incredible system. So this is the big one here, these sections here. And I'm going to read them over more. And, you know, it's tough enough for me, and I do this all the time. But just these provisions here. Here we go. The state health officer, upon declaration of an emergency, can take actions like directing manufacturers of prescription drugs or over-the-counter drugs who are permitted under Chapter 499. I'm not going to look that up. I don't do that one. Yeah, I think I pretty much covered what I wanted to cover this morning in terms of writing this bill. So let me play you one thing here. But this is the big one. Ordering an individual to examine, tested, vaccinated, treated, isolated, or quarantined. So Section 4 is the one that really needs to be gone over, I think. What's Section 5? Let me check the last one here.
You know,
than Jean.
Go ahead, Jean.
I was just going to say that it's interesting that they wrote this way back when there was no pandemic, when there was no nothing.
Well, there are other pandemics. There are other diseases. I mean, 2005 was SARS.
They did that before, didn't they?
We had swine flu was late 70s. You remember Jerry Ford and got to get your swine flu shots. So they've had you know, various pandemics come through. There was another flu in the 50s. Was that the Asian flu or the Hong Kong flu? I think it was the Hong Kong flu. But they've had different flu bugs come through.
But that's not the point. The point is this. What similarities do Jeb Bush and Barack Obama have? It's not the political party. It's that they have the globalist ideology. That's what you see working there.
Agreed. Now, let me just pull up this one. I got too many windows. I lost my comment window. I got to find my comment window where I actually wrote all this stuff down. Hang on, let me just move that. Section 4 and 5 are terrible. And I'll tell you why in a section. So I'm going to make a little note to myself. Section 315, sections 4 and 5. Hang on, section. This happens when you try and write legislation on the air. All right, so let me give you a little bit of a basis on that. So I got this. Skype line's clear, it looks like. All is well. Studio's still functioning. Show's going. All right. Section 4, that's the one that says the department has the duty and the authority to declare, enforce, modify, and abolish the isolation and quarantine of persons, animals, and premises as the circumstances indicate. What do you mean premises? Would that be businesses?
Yes, I would assume so. That's a premise.
There was another section, too, that bothered me, and I've forgotten where it was, where it said, it's talking about the definitions here. Isolation means the separation of an individual who is reasonably believed to be infected with a communicable disease. Well, why would you give the authority to reasonably believe?
That's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. So that's language I found. And I found more. That's like, you know, as authorized by law. There's another. Let me see if I can find another one of those. And these little words. These words. One word can change everything.
Right.
That goes opposite of assume innocent until proven guilty, right?
Yeah. Well, due process means you have to be proven to have the disease before you can be quarantined. And that's your constitutional right, to be free from unreasonable seizures. If you're seized because you're healthy, that's an unreasonable seizure. Anybody, you know, any logical person would see that. But here's another thing.
Uh-huh. Here's another thing, Greg and Gene. Mm-hmm. Thus be why that there's an interest of bringing people from other countries into the United States, because they don't have a sense of the liberties that we do. they would be willing and say nothing about, against giving up liberty. And what you're reading there is doing just that, giving up the liberties that was established in the Bill of Rights.
True.
Yeah. And this is why, that's why I had those disclaimers on both of these things, that, that the Constitution is supreme. And I think it has to be right there in the law so they don't get carried away with their authority. Because there is no disclaimer that that this is you know, subject to the, you know, the, subordinate to the Constitution. So I found two things in sections 1A. It says isolation means separation of an individual who is reasonably believed to be infected. Well, you can't do that. You have to prove it through a test. And the test has to be accurate. That's why I put that in. And quarantine, here's another one. Quarantine means the separation of an individual, once again, reasonably believed to have been exposed to a communicable disease. Well, this is why they get that authority to close down schools and close down businesses and send kids home for a couple of weeks. You know, in other words, exposed to a communicable disease. Well, in other words, this, remember the school board said, well, if you sat next to a kid, if you're within 6 feet of a kid who tested positive, you have to go home for 2 weeks. That was insane, but this is where it comes from. Section 1D of Chapter 381.00315. Quarantine means the separation of an individual reasonably believed to have been exposed to a communicable disease, but who is not yet ill, from individuals who have not been so exposed to prevent the possible spread of the disease. Well, that's hypothetical crap. That's prior restraint.
Yeah, it is. Are they coughing? Are they sneezing? When they stand up from a chair, do they wobble a little bit? So is that mm-hmm. your reasonability?
Yeah. And we're exposed to communicable diseases every day. Every breathing moment of our lives, we're exposed to communicable diseases. They're in the air. Quote, you know, COVID's everywhere. It's an aerosol. It floats through the air. What? How many trillion viruses did you say, Pianchi, are floating around at any one time?
Over the human genome has been exposed to over 324 trillion viruses.
Yeah.
That the body immune system has done just well with.
How about that? What, even before vaccines? Yeah. And you made a really good point. Vaccines cannot be given after the pandemic starts. Let me put that in too there. Vaccines after the onset of a disease, or epidemic. I don't have an epidemic. Too late. Exclamation points. Yeah. Why would you give a vaccine for something that's already here? That makes no sense. You always take a vaccine. You know, State Department and the military give vaccines before you go somewhere. So I think we got the sections. We got the big section of section those definitions. And if we change this part here, take out this this ability to, you know, force people by any means necessary to take a vaccine, I think we pretty much covered it. Those seem to be big ones. Yeah. Yep. I think that should do it. Rules of provision. Yeah. But here's the other thing, too. The department shall adopt rules. We're going to check over this section as well. To specify the conditions and procedures for imposing and releasing an isolation or quarantine. The closure of premises. Well, why would you close a premises if this is all based on individual quarantine? That doesn't make sense. The tests or treatment, including vaccination for communicable disease required before employment or admission to the premises or to comply with an isolation or quarantine. Well, there's your vaccine passport. Section 5C.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. It seems like it's just a lot of parallels to what's going on now. And I know they didn't have a crystal ball and didn't know that this was coming, but it's like, wow, just interesting.
Unless it was in a grand plan, Leonard Brzezinski, the grand chessboard, unless it was in a grand plan.
Well, I find it fascinating that the very things they did, closing of premises, access, they've got, you know, these different kinds of quarantine, you know, for healthy people.
Right.
Testing or treat. Here's 5C. This is three. If you want to look it up, Florida statute 381.00315, section parentheses 5 parentheses C. The tests or treatment, including vaccination, for communicable disease required before employment or admission to the premises or to comply with an isolation or quarantine. I didn't say school there specifically, but I bet you there's a section on that.
Well, you know, stuff like that, it shows that this is completely out of control. Mm-hmm. And people are coming up with all these innuendos trying to address something that is obviously completely out of control because you've done it wrong in the first place by trying to eliminate the liberty, people's liberties.
But they can read the law. We just did. It doesn't take a lawyer. It doesn't take a genius. I'm neither one of those. It doesn't take, you know, I don't know, whatever the people think it takes to be able to do this. We literally just read the law as anybody else would. It's right there. People, I really think, have to have more faith in themselves that they can do what we just did. And we just said, well, wait a minute. Why is that in there? You know, why do they have a provision that says, you know, basically a vaccine passport provision in state law? I can see why the government's trying to get this out of there. The governor is. I wish he'd talk to us. It'd be so
like
much simpler if DeSantis would call
the
show. It'd just be so much simpler. We can talk directly to him. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, but like reading the passage that talk about taking a life, mm-hmm. Well, if you're going to take a life, then you had to admit that the life exists. And when you're talking about abortion, that life would have to exist at conception.
Mm-hmm.
Or when
heartbeat. Well, no, it's interesting. So, a lot of times laws do conflict with each other. And people will cite the law that benefits their position. People don't realize that, too. You think all the laws are separate. You know, they're not. There's all kinds of conflicts. That's why they're always amending and changing. And, you know, one law, and they say, well, this is true, except for, you know, some other section of some other law. And you got to go tracing around. It's like a detective case. You know, when I say down the rabbit hole, we're not kidding. But that's how this works. All right, let me take a little break here. We've got Dr. Peter Pryor coming up. And for the next, you know, it's going to be like about 10, 12 minutes. You guys can bring up whatever you want. You know, there's several issues we can talk about. But let me do a couple things here, and we'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is the one with the delay. I sort of goofed when I made this one. It's one of my first ones, but I'll be right back. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Okay, we're back. We've got about 10 minutes just to hash over anything. Gene Pianchi, you guys have a topic you want to get to? Otherwise, I have a couple of ideas for you.
Well, I was just wondering what's going on with, because I haven't been paying attention, Biden and the Pope and Biden in his overseas tour, whatever it's called, I don't even know, and Saki got COVID, and wasn't she vaccinated?
Yeah, she was. That was announced, yes. Why do you think she got it? You know, and you got to figure the White House people are some of the best health protected people in the world, you know, and here she comes down. That's why she canceled the trip. She'd be with Biden in Glasgow, Scotland right now, talking about how to deny us our rights and give us socialism. That's what climate change is all about, which begs the question that I asked on my Facebook page. You know, if they think the world's going to end in 10 years, why do they need a $5 trillion stimulus package for infrastructure?
That doesn't cover infrastructure.
That's going to span 10 years.
Exactly. So if they're going to span 10 years of infrastructure spending and the world's going to end in 10 years, what's the point? Just a thought.
Well, actually, yeah. Well, you know, another point, too.
Uh-huh.
Action Network should be a part of a profitable business that can funnel profits toward the operation of Action Network and use it as a tax write-off. Because when you start taking on commercial, that means you're going to have less time to talk about bills like you've been doing this morning.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting sponsors. That's why I do commercials. I mean, you know, the show's growing. But that's why we're 3 hours instead of two. I just ran out of time. I might go to 4 hours if I get enough sponsors. I could do 4 hours a day once I drop the day job. Gene would hate me.
I got one more request.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got one more request, Gene. Since I've been here from 6 o'clock, where is the pancakes?
That's a great issue.
I did order some, Bianchi. I did. I ordered it last week because I'm just like, oh, my God. And I love that people are upset about it, too. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, that's one person, for those of you that don't know, Terrace Williams and his cousin T's pancake mix that's out now because he wants
Aunt Jemima.
Yes. And good for him. Good for him. And I'm glad people are buying it. And I wish him well. And yeah.
Well, you know, Gene, I want him on the show. I'm hoping you invite him.
Yes, I'm going to try to work on getting him on the show. I don't have any connections, but.
Well,
you know.
Listen, I don't have connections for half the people that are on the show. Just be brave, be bold, persevere, and, you know, see what you can get. And, you know, I'll probably help you along the way. But, because I'm hoping you can, you know, book more and more guests as this goes. But this would be a perfect project. And Pianchi, you know, we're going to tell you when he's on. I mean, it's obviously, this is going to be fun. But isn't he like the new Aunt Jemima? You know, he's defying all the political correct crap. You know, his Terrence, what's his name? Terrence, what's his last name?
Williams.
Terrence Williams. Okay.
Williams.
Terrence Williams, he's got this big blue package. He's got his picture with a chef's hat. You know, it's great. Yeah, he's extremely popular. I think he's popular mostly because of the backlash against taking off Aunt Jemima, which was stupid.
No, he's been popular for way, way before that.
Oh, okay. Well, okay.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes.
How good are the pancakes?
Well, I don't know. They just came out.
Okay. Well, we want to know.
I ordered two boxes, too.
Okay. You guys. I can't do it until I lose another 50 pounds, and then I'll start eating pancakes again, but not until then. No carbs.
But, yeah, it's just interesting that good for him that he's not he doesn't let the woke culture influence him. And, yeah, that's wonderful.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Just like with President Trump at the baseball game on Saturday doing the tomahawk chop. Now people are upset against that again.
Oh,
and it's
great.
Just like I want to just say thank you, Atlanta, for keeping the Braves and not having to change their names like the Washington I don't even know what their football team, if they ever even came
up with
a different name,
football team.
Or if they're just Washington without no name. I don't know. But in Cleveland, didn't Cleveland Indians change their name too because of the woke culture? It's like, it's just sad because these people or these franchise didn't come up with names of teams just to, as a slant or a slam or something against other cultures, other people, other whatever. No, it's just, it was just something they chose.
Well, actually,
just
a lot
like
of
Aunt Jemima, that wasn't a slam. Yeah. That was a person, a real person. And it's sad that her family was upset about them taking Aunt Jemima off the pancake or the syrup and everything.
Well, they probably lost a lot of money in royalties. I'm sure there's extended contracts on that. Every time, every year just to be able to do that. But no, the sports teams actually, a lot of it was respect for American Indian Warriors. The Washington Redskin emblem, logo, was designed by a Native American or American Indian, and in a celebration. And the problem, I talked to the Chief Dan Skyhorse about these issues from the Santa Rosa Creek tribe, is that, when the Indians aren't there, they're not thought of. They've been erased. So if you take, and this is again, leftist racist culture. If you change the name of a team, because you're saying, well, it's cultural appropriation, it's offensive, it's racist. Not really, because if you start saying the Indians, people immediately have Indians in their head. If you say the Warriors or the whatever, it's a way, it keeps the idea alive. The land of lakes, the butter that used to have the Indian maiden and the land. And then Dan, Skyhorse would frequently say, look, they killed off the Indian and kept the land. They've heard that before. So in many ways, this is an erasure. But the other thing I find, I heard a great comment one day. He says, you're naming all this stuff after us. Like Piper Aircraft, all their airplanes are named after Indian tribes, which is kind of interesting. But one person made a comment years ago when they had Geronimo Beer. He says, okay, we're going to take one of your folks. He says, we're going to start brewing Jesus Christ Beer here on the reservation. What the hell do you think of that? So I thought that was great. I would be, hey, why not? Let's see what happens. Let's have some Jesus Christ Beer. All right, back to you guys. 3 minutes.
Well, you're right about the aircraft. Piper has the Cherokee.
Mm-hmm.
It has the
Apache.
The Warrior.
Cheyenne.
Yeah. Apache.
Navajo.
Mm-hmm.
Seneca. I've flown all these planes. Well, I haven't flown the Cheyenne. I guess the exception is the Archer and the Arrow. Of course, the Arrow.
Cherokee is a good plane.
Cherokee, yeah. One of my favorites is the Piper Arrow, 200 horsepower, single engine, retractable. It's one of the best bargains in aviation. But yeah. So what are you gonna say? You can close down all Piper airplanes. You're gonna name them what? The Daffodil, the Tulip. Name them all after flowers. Ain't gonna happen. All right, who's gonna win in Virginia?
Well, it shouldn't even be a race after what McCarthy said, but it just goes to show where people's minds are.
But it's really sad. What was it? The Lincoln Project, what they did? I mean, wow.
What did
they
do?
They had people go, I don't know where, who's the other guy? I forget his name, Young, whatever his name is, the other person running, the Republican.
Yeah,
I don't know
Glenn
where.
Youngkin and Terry McAuliffe, yeah.
I don't know where Youngkin was. He was someplace, his bus was there, and they had people from the Lincoln Project out there, and they were doing things like trying to, they were doing things to make it look like Youngkin's Republican, I don't even want to say Republican, but Youngkin reporters were prejudiced, or I don't exactly know what was going on.
Oh, the old race
on.
Card? Yeah,
yes.
It's always the race
or
card.
Or just different things like that, and it was just people were insulted by it, and then it turns out it was people that were involved with various Democratic people, and not to say those Democratic people told them, oh, you need to do this, but it was the Lincoln Project, and then the Lincoln Project was like, oh, well, they went a little bit too far. It's like, so you're trying to do something to get people to not vote for Youngkin because, oh, my God, I can't believe the people that are voting for him would do something like that. And then it turns out it wasn't anything to do with him. It was Democrats.
Well, I think it all comes down to vote
fraud. Well,
I think it's all going to come down to vote fraud.
Absolutely.
And if they can, if the Republicans can actually defeat the vote fraud, Youngkin's going to win. Because by popularity, by polls, by the fact that he's, you know, going for the good issues, education, low taxes, you know, he's a Virginian for Virginians. He's not a Democrat Marxist political operative. He should win. But I don't know if he can beat the vote fraud. That's the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Sarah McCollum is one of the most underhanded,
I was reading something over
slimy...
the weekend.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can't tell when people are talking. Sorry. I was listening to something over the weekend, and they were saying that how many Republicans are for the Democrat, his view on education. I'm like, are you kidding me? Where he's for critical race. He's for not having parents involved in the schools, that parents have no business, you know, speaking out or saying anything about what kids should be taught in school. No, that's not right at all.
Yeah.
Especially when you see the culture now and what's being taught and some of the books. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like, wow, we have come, I don't want to say a long way, but that is sad.
A lot of what's going on
well,
is sad, they're operatives.
You,
go ahead, Bianchi.
Democrats have always had the opinion and the ideology that they know what's best for you. It's the same thing when they work with blacks. They were getting ahead of the movement and take it off to the right or left when the people had their visions on what was straight ahead. You see it in the schools. Exactly. You're absolutely right, Gene. They start off in the school trying to direct your children into a whole different sense of thought.
Yeah. Listen, Dr. Price with us. I'm going to hold you up for just a little bit here, but maybe we can get in a little bit because I'm going to ask Dr. the first question, you know, who's going to win? Because he's up in Virginia. So let's get to national security, and we'll talk about our Sputnik moments and everything else, and I'll be right back. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Speaking of national security and vote fraud, my contention is that if Youngkin can beat the vote fraud, he's probably going to be the next governor of Virginia. But you're up that way, so I'd be curious, sir. Do you have a take on this? And are you going to be voting tomorrow? And what's happening?
Well, I certainly plan to vote tomorrow. I have to be on the road the very next day, but I'm delaying my travels, my speaking engagements, just so that I can vote.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, everybody in Virginia who, you know, who wants to reclaim our country is highly motivated to vote. And so there's definitely an enormous enthusiasm gap, or at least that's what we're told. You know, Newt Gingrich thinks that it's going to be harder for the Democrats to steal the election here in Virginia, and he's very obviously we're all concerned that that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's me too.
You know, and I think it's going to be sort of it'll be potentially a test of whether we can take our country back or not.
Okay.
Because an eight-point lead, and he's probably got more than that lead because the polls are always biased to favor Democrats. Yeah,
yeah,
it's huge, and it should be an insurmountable lead. But, you know, during the 2020 elections, it wasn't just an issue of President Trump, but, for example, in this county, which is this district, which is a very conservative district, you know, we have our representative is Congressman Congresswoman Spamberger, you know, who's basically a socialist, a left-wing Democrat, former CIA employee, and in the 2020 elections, just like with President Trump, you know, her opponent was far ahead, tens of thousands of votes ahead. And then when we woke up in the morning, she had won the election by a couple hundred votes. So, and most people are convinced, I think it is so, that there was massive cheating, not just at the presidential level, but even down in these congressional seats. And the Democrats, in addition to having an illegitimate president, also don't legitimately control the House or Senate because there has been such massive fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Newt Gingrich thinks it'll be harder to do in Virginia because most of Virginia is Republican, and most of the counties and districts are controlled by Republicans. And there's only in a few places like Northern Virginia is what makes Virginia largely Democrat, because that's where most of the population is located. So there's maybe two or three places where they are in charge of the voting apparatus and could cheat. And Youngkin claims he's got lawyers and is well prepared for that, but we'll see. So this is going to be a bellwether for whether voting makes any sense anymore, whether we can actually have a free and fair elections.
Yeah,
and. So I don't know if he's going to win or not. I think if he loses, it's because they cheated. You know, if he loses with a commanding lead like this that theoretically should be insurmountable, and again, as I said, you know, the polls always favor the Democrats, so his lead is probably a lot more than eight points in the polls. Who knows? They may have been lying to us all along. You know, it's only coming out in the last few days, by the way. The last week between him and his opponent has been widening and widening. So
but
not
they think
only
he can win.
He ahead.
That's what it is.
Pardon?
They think he can win, and people are getting excited about that. I think that's probably the big difference.
Yes, well, that might be part. That might be part of it. It also might be that the pollsters are having concealed a lead early on, okay? Maybe he's been ahead all along, and they just didn't want to admit that. And so now they're disclosing that, oh, he's got this commanding lead at the last minute because they don't want to demoralize the Democrat troops too much and prepare people, you know, for the shock of a loss in what's supposed to be a Democrat state. See, maybe I'm too conspiracy-minded here, you know, but I don't think it's possible to be too conspiracy-minded in this current political environment. I mean, another thing I think about is, you know, it could be that, the Democrats are willing to not cheat in this case. I can imagine a scenario where they can't win the election fair and square, and they have to make a decision about whether they cheat or not in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're concerned about the evidence coming out about cheating in the 2020 election, because as you know, as you've been talking about on your show, more and more evidence is coming out along those lines. And so to derail the effort to expose the fraud in 2020, they'll allow Youngkin to win in Virginia, which is, you know, which would help derail the narrative that there is election fraud, massive election fraud across the country.
Because I think it would just do the opposite. I think it would inspire audits, you know, if he wins, and especially if they could expose things. Let me ask you, one of my moral dilemma questions. If you know the Democrats are cheating, is it moral for the Republicans to cheat better in the interest of saving our country?
Yes, I think.
Okay.
So. You may
okay,
disagree.
No, that's fine.
But I think so. I think the reason we have lost the country mm-hmm. is because most Republicans, the mainstream Republicans, have disagreed with would disagree with me and would mm-hmm. disagree with that point that you've got to fight fire with fire,
yeah.
and that they're not uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable with that. Republicans have been the constitutional, the law and order party, and they've also been the party of cowardice, you know, and mm-hmm. The media is not on their side. But I think that that's why we've lost the country, because the Republicans have not been willing to fight fire with fire for many decades, and slowly but surely, you know, we lost the country, and the loss of the country has accelerated, you know,
mm-hmm.
like a collapsing building, you know, a building that starts rotting away, you know, and slowly falling apart. That reaches a point where that collapse just accelerates, so it becomes very visible to all. You know, what appeared to be a solid structure suddenly comes apart because the main structural members have rotted away. And I think that's what's happened with our political system. It's been rotting away for years and years, but the Trump episode was sort of the weakness of the Republicans, allowing the Democrats to have metastasized into a totalitarian movement, you know, very obviously, you know, over the past 4 years. So we've had this collapse of our constitutional republic very quickly right in front of our eyes. And it's, you know, been a surprise and breathtaking, even to cynics like myself, you know, who've been predicting something like this would happen. But I didn't think it would happen within my lifetime.
Yeah.
So yeah,
well, that's why I asked you the question.
I think
go ahead.
You've got to fight fire with fire. We're in a civil war. We're in a mm-hmm. civil war for the future of this country, and there's also the principle of deterrence that you and I so often talk about in international relations. It also applies in our domestic politics as well. You know, we are an adversarial system. Now, people are supposed to play by the rules. That's why we've got a constitution. That's why we've got election laws. That's why we've got, you know, we're supposed to have a rigorous system to ensure that the votes are fair and everything. But it is an adversarial system. And if the other side doesn't hold up, you know, doesn't deter bad behavior by retaliating, you know, and when the courts don't work and you don't have mm-hmm. legal recourse, if you fail, you know, to defend your side of the chessboard, the other side's just going to completely take over. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's we see that happening now. So, yeah, I think, you know, not only should we, I think we've got a moral obligation to do it, you know, because that's the only way the system can be made to work, if it can be made to work at all. I mean, the choice is quickly becoming, do you use the dirty tricks the Democrats use in elections? Or do you let the country devolve into a violent civil war, you know, where the issue will be decided by force of arms? Because that's the choice.
Yeah, there's no recourse for people if they're cheating. I look at it this way, and I agree with you, and it's partially why I asked the question. I kind of had a feeling of your response. If the other side's cheating and there's no recourse, if you're playing by the rules, you're going to lose. Because they've already bent the rules, and they've already subjected the election to cheating. Where I would cheat is I would cheat better in terms of hacking their hacks. In other words, if they're hacking into the voting machines, if they've got remote access to the internet, if they're changing the results like they did, as pretty much demonstrated by a bunch of different people, that they are, you know, swaying the results. In other words, the great 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, changeover where you went to sleep, you know, with Trump winning, and then all of a sudden you wake up the next day and you know, Biden's ahead by 20,000 votes in every state that's critical, that's run by Democrats. It's a completely, you know, different thing that's going on. So in other words, if we can hack the hackers, if we can cheat the cheaters, we don't cheat ourselves. In other words, it's not moral to go ahead and you know, put a bunch of ballots in just because you think they're cheating. That's not moral. That's not the right thing to do. But if you can find out they're cheating, if you can find out how they're doing it, and this has been revealed by the election audits, by mail fraud, by all kinds of things like that, then yes, you know, if you change the results back to what they should have been, honestly, that to me is perfectly valid. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, well, I go even further than you, obviously.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
that's why I
ask you. You know, in that, we're also at a huge it's so late in the game, you know, we're also at an enormous institutional disadvantage, you know, when it comes to, you know, fighting this cold civil war with the Democrats, because, you know, they control the mass media and they control the internet, you know, so how do you, and that's cheating when they suppress the free speech of conservative voices, which they do.
Mm-hmm. That is cheating. Absolutely.
You know, yeah, that's even worse than stuffing ballot boxes, you know, because it's more influential. You know, the shaping the reality that people think they're living in, you know, by suppressing information, you know, suppressing the First Amendment, you know, it's hard to imagine what would not be permitted on our side, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
For that, because it's an asymmetric war that we're having to fight, you know, where they control that enormously important part, because they've cheated over the years and penetrated the mass media and taken it over and lied to the American people every day, you know, on all of these instruments. So given that they're doing that to us, you know, it's hard to imagine, you know, anything we could do back that would cross the line or be unacceptable given the sins they're committing. And then the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, for example, that they've taken over and has basically become a fascistic, you know, instrument of control, even to the point, you know, where Merrick Garland wants to use the FBI to shut up parents, you know, that object to the teaching of critical race theory. I mean, that is such a what's the equivalent that we can do, you know, that would counterbalance that, you know? I mean,
that's a good question.
Here's something
I thought of too, is I wanted to get, and I'm going to bring Lita in the conversation. She's online too. I want to ask her the moral dilemma question, but I wanted to see if I could form some kind of, and you may have, you know, people you can tell me off the air that could actually do this. I want to form like a counterstrike team. So in other words, if a conservative gets doxxed, gets raided, gets all their information out, that the counterstrike team can then go back, trace the people that did it, and out them. And say, so, well, here's the person that gave your address, you know, Tucker Carlson. Here's the person that, you know, did this to you. And here's the person that displayed your private information all over the internet. Let's get them. It's like, oh. And if people know that if they're going to go after conservatives, that they will have a counterstrike team hacking into their system as well, and they will be outed, and they will be known, and they will be, you know, hopefully, you know, with a Trump or a conservative administration, they will be prosecuted. Then that might be able to turn this around. So I've wanted to do that for about a year now, is to form a defensive team, because, you know, me, the best, you know, I forgot who said it, but the best defense is a good offense, and that would be an offensive thing, so that they would think twice about going after people with the cancel culture, knowing they're going to get canceled themselves by better hackers than they have. That's how I do it.
Well, I certainly encourage you to do it, but I don't have high hopes that it'll help level the playing field for us, you know, because first of all, all right, suppose you out people on the left, you know, it's not nearly as dangerous for people on the left to be outed by the right, because the right tends not to resort to violence or harassment. We are law-abiding and civilized, and it goes against our instincts to do that. Whereas the other side, you know, has an army of brown shirts and Antifa and, you know, people. They have a totalitarian mindset. And so that's why it's very dangerous for people like Tucker Carlson and people on the right to be outed in terms of their personal information put out there. You know, because they're willing to use violence against us, you know, whereas they don't face that same risk from our side. And as to a future Trump administration, you know, using the law, prosecuting these people, maybe President Trump has learned something, okay? But I'm not hopeful there either.
Maybe.
When you look at over the past 4 years, how he let his closest friends and allies, you know, have their lives destroyed by his political enemies, and basically did nothing. You know, didn't get it, wasn't able to get his Justice Department under control.
Yeah, Yeah, I know I've got another topic you want to get to. I'm just going to ask one quick question, then we'll leave this alone. But I want to bring Lita in. Lita, is it moral to cheat if you know you're being cheated on in an election, if you can save your country? Let me ask you the same question.
Well,
Lita?
Can you hear me, Greg?
Yeah, I hear you now. I just interrupted you before
you spoke.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and here's the thing. I truly believe it derives because we were raised, biblically speaking, from a Christian point of view, that we were raised to always do the right thing, not lie, not cheat. However, there is scripture that backs it up. And Jesus said to his disciples, he said to the people, he said, you need to go out and be shrewd or clever as a serpent, but gentle or wise or gentle as a dove. So we are to be shrewd or clever as well, because we're going out amongst wolves.
So it's moral to defeat evil by means that are necessary, as long as you don't become evil yourself. Okay, I'm just checking.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
We have to guard our hearts, but yes, we have to be clever, because we have to. I mean, evil doesn't play fair. So we have to be clever.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to
know. And there's a perfect example. Yeah, there's a perfect example in Luke 16 about the dishonest manager, how he commends him on how the master was just congratulated this clever scoundrel, this manager that was defrauded, and he found out about how shrewd this manager had handled things. And so you'll have to read it when you have time, and it's a parable. But
you can send me parables, yeah. But it's interesting. but the idea there's a Christian perspective on this. The idea that's in Scripture to be shrewd and clever. I just love it. I think that's great. Okay, let me hold you up for a bit. I'm going to leave your line live. You can join us back anytime. Gene, same thing. And Pianchi, who called in earlier, feel free to come back. Do you want to go into Sputnik, Dr. Pry? Where would you like to go from here?
Sure. I'd like to talk about our new Sputnik moment here, and whether this was a Sputnik moment. I think it's an appropriate date. And as interesting as it may be to talk about the elections, this topic actually is at least as important, if not more important, than the elections, because, you know, you can't be free if you're not alive.
Yeah.
And it is important for us to maintain deterrence and our national security and try to keep the Republic or to keep the United States alive so it can again someday become a free constitutional republic. You know, when we're very much we're facing an unprecedented situation in the history of our country and the nuclear and technological arms race, where we find ourselves behind, very far behind, and increasingly at facing multiple technological existential threats, multiple Sputnik moments, not just one. And yet Washington is divided over whether we are facing a technological crisis or not, which was the theme of my recent article. And it's very appropriate that we're actually going to have this conversation today, because on this date in 1952, you know, was the test of the first hydrogen bomb. The U.S. first tested a hydrogen bomb. And just before I got on the air with you, I was reading a little blurb about that, curious about to see how the liberal mainstream media was reporting on this. Okay, and their take on it was the last paragraph in this article I was reading was that J. Robert Oppenheimer, who was the inventor of the atomic bomb, you know, was against the United States testing a hydrogen bomb, because he and some of his colleagues felt that it would just be another pointless step forward in the arms race, in the nuclear arms race. And and so we shouldn't test the hydrogen bomb. And that Oppenheimer is right. This is what the press tells us, that Oppenheimer was right, because the very next year the Soviet Union tested a hydrogen bomb, period. You know,
who gave it to him?
So that's the lesson we're supposed to take.
That's the real question,
that
is who gave it to him? You know, it's one thing to test, it's another thing to guard your secrets. And we don't guard our secrets.
There's a lot that they don't tell you in that, because I drive just the opposite conclusion. You know, first, what we tested was a thermonuclear device. Okay, mm-hmm. It wasn't actually a weapon because we weren't far enough along to be able to turn it into a weapon.
Hmm.
And when the Soviets tested their first hydrogen bomb, it was actually a bomb. It was dropped from an airplane. So they had weaponized it a year after us. But this doesn't mean they were behind us. What is it? Suppose we hadn't tested, okay? Does this mean the Soviets wouldn't have tested? Clearly, it took them more than a year to build a hydrogen bomb, you know? In other words, they were already secretly engaged in building the hydrogen bomb behind the scenes.
Right.
They were ahead of us technologically and had the bomb. So Oppenheimer wasn't right. If we hadn't tested, they would have tested, and they would have been ahead of us, and it would have undermined our credibility and scared the hell out of our allies, and who knows, possibly might have encouraged Stalin, you know, to launch a nuclear World War III because they had stolen a march on us. They had the hydrogen bomb, but we didn't have it.
Yep.
You know, has the Washington Post thought about that? You know, obviously they don't. You know, they're always blaming us. You know, the left is always blaming us for the nuclear arms race or anything that goes on, and this pattern hasn't changed. This pattern hasn't changed, and is the problem we face in Washington today, although it exists much more severely. I mean, back in those days, when most Americans were patriotic and most scientists were patriots, and you know, we had military leaders who had lived through World War II and seen the wonder weapons of World War II, you know, people like Oppenheimer, who was a communist, by the way, or almost certainly was a communist agent, and it was one of the reasons why the atomic bomb project was compromised, and was a distinct minority point of view. The banned bomb folks back in the 1950s and people like Oppenheimer, you know, were a distinct minority. And they didn't have that much influence, unfortunately, on the ability of the United States to compete, you know, with the Soviet Union and ultimately win the Cold War. But that's not the situation today.
Hmm.
You know, the left has grown so powerful that we actually have the reaction, I think, to the new Sputnik. And what I'm talking about when I refer to the new Sputnik in my article, the most recent thing is this shocking test by China of a fractional orbital bombardment system combined with a hypersonic glide vehicle. You know, nobody's ever done that before.
Can you explain, let's go part by part, because I want people to understand exactly what this is. I kind of want to understand it myself. So the first part, you said fractional, what is that exactly? Fractional what? What's it called?
A fractional orbital bombardment system, or a FOBS.
What's that?
Okay. This is people describe it as an old concept, but it's basically a space weapon. You know, the Soviets came up with it during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
It uses a space launch vehicle, not an ICBM. So it looks like it's a peaceful space launch. And it has a nuclear weapon hidden inside a satellite.
Oh.
So that the satellite doesn't appear like a threat either. You know, what the Soviets wanted to do was figure out how can we win a nuclear war? How can we achieve a surprise nuclear attack against the United States, even though the United States has got this shield of ballistic missile early warning radars and satellites looking for our attack? And so they conceived the idea of the fractional orbital bombardment system, which would not use a military missile, an ICBM. It would use a space launch vehicle, and it would not have an obvious warhead. It would have the warhead hidden inside a satellite, so it would look peaceful, and it would launch the satellite on a south polar trajectory and a southern trajectory at a low apogee, you know, at the about the same orbit that low Earth orbit satellites travel at, which is about 150 kilometers above the surface of the Earth, and the thing would fly over the South Pole and come up from the south We have no ballistic missile early warning radars facing south. We have no
interceptors. That's the key right there.
No.
Yeah. Now, I've seen the graphs. I know what it looks like, but I want to try and give people like a visual of how to explain it. When you say terms like apogee, and we want to talk about line of sight, and the reason we can't detect these things, yeah, we figured the attack would come from the north. So the dew line, the distant early warning, all of our warning systems and our radars are based on look at any of the movies like War Games or Failsafe. They always show a map of the world with Russia on the north and the United States on the south flying over the North Pole.
Right.
They know that.
And they know that's how we're planning everything.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And by the way, okay, and so you're blind and defenseless from the south.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you could do an EMP burst with this thing to paralyze. Mm-hmm. Our command and control, our nuclear forces themselves, so that we wouldn't be able to retaliate, or at least at minimum they would be temporarily paralyzed, you know,
okay,
which would give them a chance to launch over the pole then and catch those bombers on their bases, the ICBMs in their silos, destroy them in the silos, destroy the submarines in their port facilities, cut off the communications to the submarines at sea so that they couldn't be employed. And, you know, that was part of the plan. But also, and there's an illustration in this article I sent you,
mm-hmm,
the other advantage of the FOBs is that suppose that you could, even if you went right into the teeth of our ballistic missile early warning system, because mm-hmm, it flies at such a low apogee, you know, it's in orbit, right? Even then, it greatly reduces your early warning time. You know, it leaves you with almost no early warning time because it's hidden by the Earth's horizon. You know, it's flying at such a low altitude. You can't see it till it comes up over that horizon. And when you compare the early warning time that we're used to and that we're expecting, which is from an ICBM launched on a normal ballistic trajectory, it
mm-hmm
reaches a height of, you know, like 1,000 miles, you know, and it's way up there in space. And so we see it coming much sooner. And all of our plans, our retaliatory plans, our decision-making timelines are based on that threat. And so even if they wanted to go right into the teeth of the BMUs and not go over the southern pole, they're still reducing by a very dangerous margin, you know, mm-hmm, our early warning capabilities. And when you combine it with the hypersonic glide vehicle, it gets even worse, you know, because the we've talked before on the show, but the hypersonic glide vehicle is this new technology that's been weaponized by Russia and China, and even North Korea has tested a hypersonic glide vehicle now. But and it skims along at the top of the atmosphere, and it can be
It's gliding, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
it's
gliding
a power
along. Source. How long can it glide? Years? How long can it stay up there? Anybody know?
It depends how much velocity you put into it. You know,
okay,
it can
it's hypersonic.
Probably not years. It's not designed to go to be up there years like a. But you could orbit it like that. But it can't. If you're putting it up where you could have it up for years, like the North Korean satellites are,
mm-hmm,
that we've often talked about on your show.
Yeah, we should do
you
that
know,
again.
There's basically
been a while.
No atmosphere up there, so it can't maneuver unless there's some atmosphere. These things are designed to be even lower altitude than the FOBs, you know, maybe
mm-hmm,
maybe 60 kilometers high, you know, and so they have you have even less early warning against them, and they maneuver, and the skimming along the top of the atmosphere, and most of the focus in the Western media is on their ability to defeat our ballistic missile systems, because the left-wing press, which is all the press pretty much, you know, except a handful of objective conservative press, want to blame the United States for Russia's development and China's development of the FOBs and the HGV. And their argument is they're afraid of our ballistic missile defenses, you know. If only Ronald Reagan hadn't proposed Star Wars, you know, back mm-hmm in the Cold War. They're afraid of us bringing Star Wars back. They're afraid of us beefing up our ballistic missile defenses, and that's why they're doing that, you know, to make sure that they have a retaliatory capability against us. And that is just utter nonsense. You know, our ballistic missile defenses are practically non-existent. You know, we've got 44 ground-based interceptors, and the whole national missile defense You know, and they're not even, and they're even dumb GBIs. They're designed to go after Iranian or North Korean missiles, and they're not even good enough because the North Korean missile technology is based on what the Chinese and Russians have given them. You know, the North Korean missile threat is much more sophisticated than we anticipated for the GBI. So
of
it even has a hard time getting, it even has a hard time intercepting North Korean missiles, let alone highly sophisticated, much better Russian and Chinese ICBMs. And there's only 44 of them. You know, Russia has got literally 10,000 multi-capable missiles that can be used for ABM, anti-aircraft, and cruise missile interception. And they just introduced another one at the S-500, which is more capable than anything we've got. You know, Russia has got the most robust missile and air defenses in the world by far, and it poses a serious threat to our retaliatory capabilities. But you never hear the left or even the United States complaining about that. You know, it's always and you know, this is clearly an attempt by them to achieve a nuclear war winning capability. It's an aggressive first strike capability that they're developing, and they play our press like a violin, you know, because they don't want us to deploy defenses because they want us to continue to remain vulnerable, not because they fear that their retaliatory capabilities will be compromised, but because they don't want their war-winning capability to be interfered with or compromised by some kind of defense that we might mount. And so this is part of the great debate that's going on in Washington about whether this is a Sputnik moment or not. You know, half of Washington, the stupid half, the half that writes for the Washington Post and the New York Times, the arms control community, the State Department types, you know, the academics who write for Union of Concerned Scientists, the Federation of American Scientists, you know, and who just spout Russian and Chinese propaganda about how we are to blame. It's the fault of the United States. They also blame our extremely modest modernization program, as if Russia and China are responding to our efforts to modernize our deterrent, which is a complete lie. You know, they've been building long before us. And, you know, we waited as long as possible, you know, before modernizing our deterrent, to the point that, you know, our ICBMs, our Minuteman ICBMs, are so old, they're on the verge of failure. The Ohio-class submarines, you know, they've been around since Ronald Reagan. They've got to be replaced, you know. We can't wait any longer. You know, we basically have no more choice. And even when we, when we do implement the modernization program that we have right now, which is a modernization program inherited from Obama, by the way. This was not President Trump's idea of a modernization program. You know, this was Obama's. President Trump got talked into supporting the Obama administration version of modernizing our forces. In fact, you may recall this, Greg. There was one of the early criticisms of Trump was when he was first briefed on the strategic nuclear balance, he was appalled that we didn't have a vast superiority. And what, you know, and according to leaks, he wanted us to build up much bigger and more capable nuclear forces than Russia and China had. And he was really surprised that we had parity because of these agreements, or that the Russians even had huge advantages, like a 10-to-1 advantage in tactical nuclear weapons. And Trump's instincts, as always, were right. But he got talked out of that, you know, by his advisors, who said, no, you know, we need to, you know, the arms control approach, we need to, you know, follow do what's consistent with our arms control agreements and the New START treaty. Talked him into going along with the Obama administration's version of nuclear modernization, which is going to be, you know, 10 years from now, you know, when we basically have replaced Ohio's with the Columbia's, you know. I mean, it's still a ballistic missile submarine, basically. You know, it's not a big technological improvement at all.
Well, why don't we have hypersonic missile submarines? Let me jump here for a second.
Yeah, we won't have those. We won't.
But
we're
building the wrong weapons. We're building the wrong weapons for the wrong war.
These systems will be as irrelevant as the B-29 would have been in 1957, given the Sputnik threat. And your audience may not remember, I should have preambled all of this by pointing out that Sputnik in 1957, we were such a different country back then,
yeah.
You know, that the reaction to Sputnik on a bipartisan basis, you know, as I said, Oppenheimer's voice he was not listened to. You know, the anti-nuclear far left point of view had little impact on our plans. And, you know, LBJ and Eisenhower was the president at the time, but LBJ was, I think he was the senior most Democrat in the Senate, and they controlled the Senate, but they unified behind a emergency national security plan to catch up with the Russians in developing space weapons. You know, our efforts to develop missiles at that point were failing. And we succeeded. You know, we ended up with a 5-to-1 advantage over the Soviet Union in ICBMs by the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis. We had ballistic missile submarines. We had a vastly superior, you know, strategic bomber force, enabled us to prevail and win the Cuban Missile Crisis without it becoming a thermonuclear world war, which it might have been if the Soviets' balance of nuclear power, you know, Khrushchev would almost certainly not have backed off and suffered that humiliation. And his eventual replacement from power, by the way, you know, as punishment for his failure during the
Cuban Missile Crisis.
And what a contrast with today, you know, where we have a whole series of Sputniks, that are threatening the foundations of nuclear deterrence. And Washington can't unify, can't get behind. In fact, Washington is dominated by the left perspective on this, what I call in my article the anti-nuclear, you know, media complex. You know, everybody's blaming the nuclear arms race on the so-called U.S. military-industrial complex, but nobody ever talks about this other complex that's out there, which is this alliance of the anti-nuclear community, you know, which comprises these organizations that I was describing, plus the arms control community, plus our left-wing universities and the left-wing press. They are dominating the conversation and blaming us for what Russia and China are doing, and because they're on the verge of realizing one of their wildest dreams in the Nuclear Posture Review, which is coming out in January. And I thought they tipped their hand here in some of the press reporting, you know, because the Pentagon and a lot of people, defense professionals, have been hoping that Biden will be rational and will, in the face of these threats, will at least continue the modernization program, you know, that we have in mind, which, as I have pointed out, even that is inadequate, okay? But that's what they're hoping. That's the best we can hope for, that they will continue that. And a lot have been hoping that this will happen. But from, for example, CNN and other people who have access to inside the Biden White House, what they report, you know, is that the Biden administration is getting prepared for a huge scale back of U.S. nuclear deterrent capabilities. And we've talked about that on your show, too, like getting rid of our ICBMs unilaterally, denuclearizing the bombers, and reducing us to a ballistic missile submarine monad, a minimum deterrence posture, which will be suicidal in the face of these threats.
Let me this is great information. I still have a couple more questions for you, but I want to get to Gene and lead on the conversation here. These are non-nuclear expert, regular folks who have – actually both in the health professions. Let's go to Lita first. Given what we've just heard, do you think we should build up our nuclear deterrent? And what do you remember of Sputnik? And not that you were there, but I'm just saying, but you know, in terms of history, the Sputnik moment, the Russian satellite, do you remember it? Did you remember, were you taught it in school? Did you hear anything about it? And do you think that we should be equal or better to our adversaries that have nuclear missiles pointed against us? Now, I'm not asking for a theoretical, you know, you don't have to be an expert on this. I just want your gut feeling as to where you think we should be. And she dropped. She just dropped the call. Okay, I want to. All right, so much for that. Gene, do you want to throw an opinion on that? What do you think we should do? Oh, she's not calling us either. All right. I tried. I guess the topic we're not going to get to. Oh, she's back. Okay, let's see if we get this back in. In just a second, let's get this one. So, Lita, was that just a bad sell or something? I thought you didn't like my question and you left.
No, I'm sorry, Greg. I got a phone call and I had to take it.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Did you get the question? I'm just gut feeling. Do you think
no,
we should build?
No, I didn't. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Well, let me ask you real quickly again. Do you think we should build up, given what Dr. Price said so far, do you think we should build up our nuclear forces so that we are at least equal or better than our adversaries? And what do you remember of Sputnik? You know, were you taught it in school? Did it, did it have an impact? Is it something that you just hear about now for the first time? I'm just curious. So nuclear weapons and then Sputnik. Just a gut feeling.
We definitely have to be on guard at all times and keep up with the times. I feel like, yes, we need to be advanced with the nuclear weapons.
Okay.
And as far as Sputnik, I don't remember ever learning that in school. I don't know. Of course, I went through a lot of things in school, so that's why I like.
No, but that's important to know.
I know. Critical
because now I can say, Dr. Pry, these people aren't even learning about Sputnik. How can you describe a Sputnik moment to a population that doesn't even know what it is? But it's interesting that Lita thinks that we should be, and that's not your fault. Okay, that's the education system. But here we have just a regular person in the health professions who thinks that we should advance, you know, our nuclear defense so that we are at least equal or better than these people. And yet Washington is saying, no, we need to be subservient way down low. So if these people actually asked regular Americans, I think they would all, first of all, they'd be surprised at how far behind we are. And secondly, that, what do you mean you're not advancing? What do you mean we're not the best in the world? What happened here? What the hell's going on? I think that'd be a huge shock to the American population if they knew just how far back we were. Dr. Pry?
Really need to teach history on the things and the events, but they're not talking about it. They don't want to talk about it. And that's why I like to listen to your show. I like to hear all different kinds of speakers speaking truth.
Yeah. Dr. Pry? They're not even talking about
even our
no
favorite,
one knows what it is.
Even our,
yeah. Go ahead.
Even our favorite general, okay, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Miley.
Oh, Milktoast?
has described the Chinese FOBS HGV test as almost the Sputnik moment, okay? So even he, as uncomfortable as it makes both of us, even he is on our side, okay?
Wow.
So the Pentagon is on our side. The defense and intelligence communities are on our side. The independent analysts who have usually worked for the defense and intelligence communities, they're all on our side. They're the half of Washington that realizes the danger of the moment. Even General Miley realizes the danger of the moment.
Okay.
You know, but it's scary to see that, you know, how powerless even the Joint Chiefs of Staff is in the Pentagon, and that they're, in effect, losing the struggle in Washington to what I am calling the anti-nuclear media access, you know, which is comprised of a lot of stupid people, you know, who have no background in defense or intelligence or science or technology. They opine and are people like Jeffrey Lewis, okay, from the Middlebury Institute, who is, you know, probably the most frequently, whenever a nuclear issue comes up, Jeffrey Lewis is probably the most quoted man in the West, you know,
not
on
you?
All of these.
No way.
I wish.
Even
General Hyten, you know, who is the commander of STRATCOM, doesn't get as much ink as Jeffrey Lewis gets. And Jeffrey Lewis, who is he? You know, he's a professor at the Middlebury Institute who knows nothing about these things, really. You know, he writes about things, but he's not an expert in this. He's a political scientist. And you know, he never worked for the defense or intelligence communities. He doesn't have a deep background on these issues. I gave him an example in my article that, you know, Jim Woolsey was on National Public Radio.
Yes.
Woolsey was the former director of Central Intelligence and is one of the best former DCIs that we ever had. He was one of my bosses when I worked for the CIA. And he went on National Public Radio to talk about some other issue. But he used the opportunity to try to sneak in a comment about the North Korean EMP threat from their satellites.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what to do. They were flat-footed by that, okay? So instead of having Woolsey back to talk about that in greater detail, NPR brought on Jeffrey Lewis, basically to rebut Woolsey. And Lewis laughed hysterically at the idea that North Korea could pose an EMP threat to the United States. And that generated a lot of objections and criticisms of Lewis and NPR from people listening who actually knew the facts, you know. And NPR claimed that they were going to launch an investigation to see what the real facts were. And they lied and they covered up for Jeffrey Lewis. They didn't mention the EMP Commission reports. They ignored letters written from the chairman of the EMP Commission and by myself and by other experts, you know, defending Ambassador Woolsey for trying to warn the American people. So in effect, NPR lied to the American people that there really is an EMP threat from North Korea. And that's the kind of intellectual dishonesty, ignorance that we face. And yet these people are basically in charge of at least half of Washington, and they are winning. They are winning the policy struggle here, yeah, because they are an important part of the Democrat Party political base. Senior Democrats think the way they do and have embraced the fictions that these people put out, and many important members of the Biden administration are derived from this camp, from the anti-nuclear media. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with the nuclear posture review in January 2022, which isn't that far away, 3 months
away.
Will
that be public at all?
You know, we're going to see if the Biden administration is going to step off the cliff, you know,
yeah,
and risk all of our lives, you know, by starting to radically scale back our nuclear deterrent,
yeah,
even while Russia and China and North Korea are posing an existential growing threat to us.
Here's a question, too. The amount we spent, I hear we spent some $6 trillion on Afghanistan before Biden surrendered. We spent how many, like, in stimulus, like a couple of trillion plus another trillion to pay people not to work. So there's like $9 trillion of completely wasted money, plus the money spent on Iraq and other places I think were totally wasted also. So in comparison, let's say $10 trillion of total wasted money, how much would it cost to actually fix our nuclear deterrent compared to these costs, compared to the $10 trillion we've wasted in these other places? What is there, like, an outline? Is there a budget, you know, for I mean, you can't predict exactly, but given research and development necessary.
About a trillion dollars to implement the modernization program that we currently have in mind.
Okay.
And
so,
you know, maybe
$5 trillion...
1.5 if you include overhauling our nuclear labs and the defense industrial base as well. Not just building the forces, but doing something that's even, arguably, even more important than building Columbia-class, you know, submarines, which is actually repairing and restoring the defense scientific industrial base, which is almost non-existent now. I mean, you know, we can't even make plutonium pits anymore.
Wow. And we'll get to what those are in a second. But the point that I was trying to make is that this is entirely doable, that we've wasted probably 10 times the amount of money on things that could not be won, whereas this can be won. We can do this. We just have to direct the money in the right direction. And now they're talking about $5 trillion in they say infrastructure, but it's really socialist, you know, global warming, Green New Deal crap that, you know, Thief in Chief Biden is now talking irrelevantly about in Glasgow, Scotland. But this is a doable thing. So my next question for you, Dr. Pride, is,
well,
you know,
let me add before
go ahead,
we go
yeah.
on to your second,
okay.
Because let
you
me just comment on
left.
What you just said. Okay, this is one of those great minds with a common thought. You know, because you've come to exactly the same conclusion as a person who, a guy named Ambassador Dan Gallington. Okay, who was a Reagan administration ambassador, and almost every week he bemoans correctly all the money we wasted in Afghanistan. You know, pointing out how if we had a small fraction of that money, you know, we could have restored the strategic nuclear balance, so we wouldn't be in such peril today. And in my article, I point out that we could even do better than that. You know, Ambassador Cooper who had headed up the Strategic Defense Initiative, President Reagan's so-called Star Wars, mm-hmm. which was designed to come up with advanced technologies to render nuclear missiles obsolete, you know, to slay the nuclear dragon so that we would enter a new technological era where our defense, where our defense is literally based on strategic defense, the ability to shoot mm-hmm. down weapons of mass destruction instead of holding hostage, you know, other civilizations by the threat of nuclear strikes. You know, Ambassador Cooper calculates that it would take us, cost only $20 billion, and that in 5 years, you know, we could deploy Brilliant Pebbles, you know, which would transform the situation and realize President Reagan's nuclear missile shield, you know, which would completely transform the current strategic situation and result in a much safer, more peaceful world for us. That's what the Russians and Chinese don't want us to do, because it will interfere with their plans to fight and win a nuclear war. There are things we can do that would cost very little.
Yeah. But there must be a way to reach out to some of the more conservative news sources out there, Breitbart, National File, Epic News, you know, some of the bigger shows. Get on Joe Rogan's show. This information needs to get out. And you can't use the traditional sources.
It does get out. I mean, they publish my articles. They publish other articles. The article I sent you today will be published by Center for Security Policy, and it will probably be picked up by Breitbart and Newsmax. Okay. You know, I write in Newsmax all the time.
Does
Ambassador Cooper. So the conservative media, you know, this does get out there. But let's face it, our megaphone is not nearly as big, you know, as the megaphone that the left enjoys in terms of mass media.
National Public Radio is government socialist radio. It's funded by our tax dollars to fight against us. Are they connected to the State Department at all? Is there an NPR State Department incestuous relationship of suppressing information that you're talking about here?
You know, I don't know. There probably is, you know, these left-wing groups, you know, are usually connected and work together. Mm-hmm. For sure they are connected to, you know, far left, anti-nuclear and anti-American groups, you know, As I noted, they brought on Jeffrey Lewis. How did they even know about Jeffrey Lewis? You know? I mean, it's because he's constantly being quoted in the New York Times and international press too. As if this guy is Edward Teller or somebody, you know?
Like Paul Ehrlich.
You know, when he's just a hack, a political scientist, you know, with strong opinions, you know, who doesn't care when he's proven wrong over and over again, you know,
and it doesn't
diminish his credibility either when the real world doesn't conform to what Jeffrey Lewis has told the press. You know, he'll tell them something days later. When he laughed at Woolsey, for example, on NPR, the next week, North Korea conducted a high altitude EMP fusing test that was noted even by Japan and South Korea. Japan, Japanese, and South Korean intelligence agencies reported it to the press. It got published in the press, and it actually got published. You know, there was actually some attention paid to that. But Jeffrey Lewis had just laughed at that idea the week earlier, and it didn't hurt his credibility with the left wing media at all. You know, in the old days when people were supposed to be, when credibility mattered and being right mattered. You know, it should have been a career-destroying thing for him in terms of him getting press attention. You know, to be proven so wrong so quickly,
Well, the person I mentioned before, Paul Ehrlich, has never got economics right. He's the go-to person for the left. Dr. Fascist, who we affectionately called Dr. Fauci around here, is only a medical doctor. He's not even a virologist, yet he gives, you know, worldwide advice on viruses, but he's not an epidemiologist either. We got just about a minute left, and I'm wondering, is there any other country, you know, on our side that's actually doing work in hypersonics? Israel, India, Japan, is anybody working on this? Or is it all the communist dictatorships that are doing it? Like, so we only have a minute left. I also want to find out where your speeches are, too. So feel free to post those or send those to me so I can post them as well, any speaking engagements you have. Is anybody else on our side working on this stuff? Or what's going on? Much of that next.
I don't know if any of our allies are working on it. If they are, it may be at a classified level.
Okay.
But they probably will be getting into it if they aren't already. France and Britain, I should think. Of course, they labor under the same political problems that we have with the left and the anti-nuclear movement. Our own program is really nascent. General Hyten, who's the deputy chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he's a good guy. He's not like Miley, but he's pointed out that China has conducted hundreds of HGV tests at this point, and we have conducted only 9.
Yeah.
So even we are in our plans. We don't have plans for a nuclear-armed hypersonic glide vehicle. All their HGVs are part of the nuclear, are designed to be nuclear-armed. Ours are.
I got to hold you up. We're out of time. We have to pick this up next week. But this is left us a lot of places to go. And now we know the problem is solvable. It's just, like everything else. It's a willpower problem. It's not a technology or financial problem. I have to leave you there, but please post your speeches or announce speaking engagements, or if you can get a series of videos that we can also send out, that might get more awareness for this. But I have to thank you, and let's pick it up again next week. Thanks to Gene and Pianchi and Lita and our bill writing session earlier in the show. This has been quite a day, and hopefully my voice will be back more tomorrow. Dr. Pryor, thank you so much. Good luck with your trip and speaking engagements.
Thank you
so
much.
Have a good day.
Okay.
All right,
there
we go.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye now. Greg Penglis for Action Radio, back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 Mountain and 4 Pacific, and of course the rest of the world. Tune in when you can, and I'll see you tomorrow on blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction.